Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
All right, Joel. So overall, I think a little bit of a filler episode of Dynamite tonight in a lot of ways. But a couple good matches. A solid main event in terms of the presentation of Malakai Black, I'd say. But a strange kind of angle at the end, though, that I think is going to be the biggest takeaway from the show. Cody teasing retirement, getting pretty serious and believable with it. And then Malakai Black just comes out, attacks from behind, and that's the end of that. So take that part first. I mean, what do you make of that angle in particular? Is it just kind of, hey, a Cody being Cody thing, and we need this storyline to have a little more drama and depth, so we're going to manufacture this retirement angle? Or is this something more serious for him?
Yeah, I mean, definitely an interesting take on this angle, you know, to do something where, kind of the old Mark Henry thing, right? Taking off your boots and pretending that you're about to retire. I don't think that's in Cody's future, anytime soon, an actual retirement from the ring. I think that would be quite shocking if that happened. But, I mean, the way he set it up with the babyface promo definitely led you to believe that, he's accomplished what he has wanted to and is, getting this company off the ground and being one of those integral pieces and getting over a lot of the young talent. But I think it's just another wrinkle in the story, to give it something a little bit more that, Malakai Black was able to destroy him so quickly. That Cody's like, man, we finally made it. Here we are, in 2021 with so many episodes of Dynamite, nobody thought that we could make it. And here we are. And then to see, him get destroyed by one of the young talents. But the story is going to definitely continue, with Black attacking him from behind. And so I think it just gives it a little extra oomph after we got to see him, see a little bit of what Black can do with a lot of the spectacular kicks and winning in such short fashion that I think it's just going to give a lot more fire to the feud going forward.
Yeah, for me, I think it's very much, and I say this a lot on this show, but it's in the follow-up for me, because I think on the surface, you can ask yourself a lot of questions. Like, I don't like – teasing the retirement thing just out of nowhere. I think this feud had some legs to it. And if Cody was just going to walk away, like what's Black's purpose for coming back? I mean, like, he was laying down thick, putting the boots in the ring. I mean, Black conceivably knew kind of where Cody was going. So why push him? I think we need a good, some type of messaging from Black to kind of, iterates on, like, why is he continuing this on when Cody was going to just walk off into the sunset anyway, and it was going to be, presumably, Black show at that point moving forward. So I think there's some loose ends there. I also think that the promo itself, and again, we're talking about this 7 minutes after the show, so, time to marinate for sure. But I thought that, Cody laid it on so thick with the retirement, Joel, took a bit of the wind out of the sails of the win for Black, because that was an impressive showing top to bottom. And I thought he looked great. The entrance was great. He kind of got the last laugh, but I don't know. I thought the promo really kind of distracted from the fact that Malakai Black just decimated him in 2 seconds. And, Cody didn't sell it all that great because he's up on his feet. He's talking, he's crying. So I thought that missed for me in terms of tone.
Yeah, I definitely can see what you're saying with that. I mean, for me, it still worked in the fact that they drew it back to Black by the end of it. That they definitely, Cody put him over by getting this fantastic win, in just very surprising fashion. I mean, you would think that this match would, go right to the end and then Black would win there, but then to have it, end, I think, with like five or seven minutes before the show went off the air. And then Cody, you know, is trying to get himself back over by giving this babyface promo. But I think that they, you know, drew it back into black by the end of it, you know, with having the closing shot on him. So it definitely wasn't all about Cody, but I definitely can see what you're saying there.
What did you think of the presentation of Malakai Black tonight? I thought the entrance was super cool, like right in line with the character. I thought, you know, he looked the part in the ring. I thought he worked in a way that was really believable. The finish of that match with the Black Mass kick was just tremendous. Like, just really just spot on in terms of timing and in terms of Cody just, you know, selling that, dropping down, just really kind of a way to present Black in a big time way as a main event level guy. Talk about your thoughts on that a little bit, because I thought it was a good night for him.
Yeah, I think it really fit the moment that fans were really looking forward to seeing, you know, this presentation of Tommy End, you know, versus, you know, getting away from the Aleister Black in WWE and seeing, you know, really what is his vision of the character, you know, working with AEW. And I think that they pulled it off really well to be something that's something that's very different from anything else that you're seeing on the show. But also, like you said, a very main event type character, you know, with the over the top entrance. People were very excited to see him. They're chanting for him during the match. You know, and then during it, I think that just the way Cody sold for it, but all of his offense, you know, really incorporating that type of MMA style, with the different kicks, the variety of, you know, different submissions and stuff like that, I think really worked well, to differentiate Black and make him come off like a star.
Yeah. Yeah. So on that note, so he got a pretty good reaction, and Cody, there was some mixed reactions in there from the crowd tonight, some boos, some really strong cheers too. So, you know, it wasn't all bad for Cody. Can this type of angle work, the retirement angle, if the audience isn't fully behind, you know, the babyface? Because it just felt like there's a lot of people there wanting to cheer Black, did cheer Black. And, you know, I don't – and, like, his presentation, yeah, heelish in terms of what he did in the ring. But there's just a cool factor to it that I think is going to attract a lot of fans.
Yeah, definitely. I think that there was a lot more people who were behind Black because they wanted to – they were intrigued by seeing, you know, what he was going to do here. And Cody – while the fans have always been pretty solidly behind him, as we're seeing with crowds coming back here, is that there are some people who are Cody detractors. And Cody obviously is aware of that, and that's why I think he gave this promo after the match. And so, you know, I think that it worked in this moment, but we're going to have to see kind of how it develops in the follow-up as we go from town to town, because, you know, this is what he called AEW's home, you know, being in Jacksonville, because they were there for so long that there's definitely a connection with Cody, you know, sticking with him throughout the entire pandemic. So again, it's going to be in the follow-up here to see if this really does work for him.
Are there any other major takeaways that you had, you know, from the angle at the end, in terms of anything that stood out in terms of, hey, I think they're going this direction or that direction? I'm sure we'll talk all about the angle, you know, and the match itself with some callers, but just high level, Joel, anything else that stood out in terms of that, either on the Cody side or the Malakai Black side?
Well, I mean, Black is going to be presented as a heel, but I think that as he goes around to different towns, that I think he's going to get huge babyface reactions. You know, I think he falls more in line with being that kind of cool heel, you know, with the cool entrance and wearing the black, that I think fans are going to get behind him pretty quickly. So I think that they're going to have to find a way, to make him more into a heel beyond just, you know, surprise attacks from behind.
Yeah. Yep. I agree. I definitely agree with that. They're going to have, especially if they're going to like really still stick with Cody as a babyface, you know, they're going to have to find ways to try to get that negative reaction. And I think, I don't know, I think in a lot of ways they might be, you know, swimming upstream on that, just because of the, like you said, the cool factor of Black and the fact that, you know, for whatever reason, you know, the Cody kind of shine is fading a bit. But we'll see. Cause you said the hopping town to town is a significant factor here. And you've got, you know, live audiences that haven't seen these guys in such a long time.
Exactly.
You know? And so that could freshen up a Cody pop very easily. And yeah, it'll have the same effect on Black too, but at least you're not totally swimming against the tide, in terms of how you're trying to present Cody. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be interesting to see how this turns out, because there's been signs of Cody, you know, his star power not being as strong as it was. But like we said, it's in Jacksonville where they've been running that market for, you know, who knows how many weeks now. You know, they've been on the road for a little bit, but coming back there so quickly, you know, they're definitely going to be more excited for the newcomer.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, let's pause there for a second and set the table for the show. We're going to be taking calls. We should have an on-site correspondent who was in the building tonight that can help us kind of answer some of these questions about the reaction to Black and Cody and everything else that happened. But this is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post-show covering the August 4th, 2021 edition of AEW Dynamite. I'm PW Torch assistant editor Zach Cador, and I'm filling in for Wade. Tonight, Wade is going to be on the VIP side of things a little bit later with a rundown and full analysis of tonight's show on the Wade Keller Hotline. And for VIP members, Wade posts every day with the hotline. And if you're interested, you can go VIP by heading to pwtorch.com/goVIP. Tons of hours of VIP audio podcasts and just a slew of other content to consume on a regular basis. It's pwtorch.com/goVIP. The other voice you hear tonight is that of pwtorch.com contributor Joel Donnell. Joel, it's always a blast to talk wrestling with you, man. Glad to have you on the show tonight.
Yeah, Zach, I'm really appreciate you having me on. Right now I'm going through a move, so I haven't been able to do some podcasting lately because I've packed up all my podcast equipment, and now today I finally got it all set up here in one of our guest rooms, so I'm glad to be on with you.
Dusting off the old podcast gear.
Absolutely.
I love it. Yes, and I mean, moves are never fun, man. So,
no.
You know, we're all thinking of you.
It's been a very stressful situation, but I'm glad we've gotten most of our stuff set up here. So there's still a lot to be put away, but you know, I feel like the big bulk of it is done now.
Good. You're going to have that one box that stays unpacked for like 5 years, you know?
There's going to be quite a few of those. There's going to be quite a few of those.
Yes, yes, for sure. Let's open up the phone lines, man. 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558. Press 1 if you guys are in the queue right now and you want to get on the show to give us your thoughts. Again, that's 347-215-8558. We're filling up with calls, so this should be fun. Again, if you don't want to talk to us tonight, you can drop us an email, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. We'll get to that mailbag a little bit later. But Joel, you know, we have our on-site correspondent up first and right out of the gate. So he's in the building, I think. So we'll go ahead and take this call. Grant, is that you?
Yes, it is me.
Grant, great to talk to you, man. Hey, welcome to the welcome to the show. Yeah, we can hear you. Can you hear us?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you. It's a lot going on. They're breaking down here. So.
No problem. Yeah, oh, you're still in the building, right?
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, give us a kind of a taste of the vibe in the building tonight. Was it a sellout top to bottom? Do you feel the building was full?
I don't think they made all the seats in the building available. Just going by first glance. So for what was available, I say it was probably like 90% full.
Okay, and what was kind of the crowd like? They seemed pretty hot, you know, on TV, but were they kind of in tune with what was happening and excited to be there for the most part?
Yeah, they were pretty hot for everything, pretty much. Even I got here a little early, and I was able to catch some of the elevation taping, and like probably one of the biggest pops of the whole night was the Lucha Bros, and that was before the main card started.
Wow, interesting. So was that the biggest pop of the night, or did something else trump it?
That probably might have been second. If I would have to say first, I would say, Malakai Black got a really, really big reaction, which was, you know, and you kind of could sense in the building, like you hear murmurs in the crowd, like a lot of people just felt like he was done pretty bad in WWE, so like it was a lot of that kind of support. But I think probably the biggest pop was Moxley and Kingston.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. Joel, throw a couple questions at Grant.
Yeah, so Grant, let's stay on that topic of Cody Rhodes versus Malakai Black. What was the reaction like for Cody Rhodes? I mean, was it a strong babyface reaction? Were there people rejecting him? You know, what was the feeling throughout for him?
I think it was mixed. You had a lot of black support, and so kind of because of that, then you saw a lot of the Cody. You heard a couple of Cody boos, but it was a mixed reaction though.
And Grant, was that because they were more in support of Malakai Black?
I just started
or was
my
because they?
I'm sorry.
Was
I
it because
you,
they
sorry.
Were
somebody? Had said
oh, no worries. Was it more because they were in support of Malakai Black, or were they outright just rejecting Cody?
No, it wasn't an outright rejection of Cody because he still had a lot of cheers, like a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
But it just was it wasn't that big over the top, like full support like he had in the past. I think, like I said, I think it was more so opponent than anything because as soon
sure.
as Malakai went to the back mm-hmm. and was out the picture when Cody was doing his speech, he had full support. So, like I said, I think it was more so people being behind Black and not against Cody.
Sure.
Was the audience buying kind of the Cody retirement? Like, were they kind of hooked? Did he have you guys for the most part thinking that, hey, this is going to actually be a retirement for him? Or did you guys kind of see through what it ended up being?
Well, a lot of people thought that he was serious. For the most part, everybody knew, he got a new kid. People thought, okay, well, he'll take some time off and then come back sometime later. So that's what you heard a lot of. So that's why most people was buying into it. So when Black interrupted, it was a little bit of a surprise.
Interesting. Let's pivot a little bit out of the Cody stuff and what about Adam Page? So the on television we just got they came out of a commercial break and Page was in the ring, so we didn't get the full on Page entrance. What was the reaction to him in the building?
In the building, Page was when he first came on the screen with the Dark Order, he got a really really good reaction. So when and then people didn't think we were going to see him again. So then when they announced that he was actually about to come out, he got a really really big pop once his music hit, and him and Tony were already in the ring, and I guess that's when you all were able to pick up.
Okay. So I mean, would you? But was he like on par with like Moxley and Kingston and Darby, or was he significantly less than that?
I wouldn't say significantly less. If I would have to say, he probably got the fourth biggest reaction behind Moxley, Lucha Bros, and Black.
Okay. Interesting. How about for the Elite? You know, they got some very audible negative reactions and boos. You could tell on television. But so they seemed, pretty over in terms of heels. But talk through Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, and that crew.
Yeah, it was pretty much what you all heard is exactly what it was. It was pretty much all booze. They're definitely doing a good job getting heat, that's for sure. And that's coming from me, who was probably one of the biggest Young Bucks fans you'll find. I've been following them since they were Generation Me. So, yeah, so it was definitely audible booze.
Did Kenny Omega seem to have the aura of a world champion walking out there? Did he seem and come across as a big time championship heel star?
Yeah, I think if you were to be someone who weren't familiar with the product and you seen that entrance, him coming out with Matt, Nick, and the rest of the Elite, I think you would definitely pick up on that. Okay, this is the main guy. It's supposed to be the biggest star. I think he gave off that vibe, especially once he got on the mic.
Yeah. Joel, back to you for a couple more.
Yeah, so, Grant, what was the feeling in the crowd when they announced that Christian was the number one contender for the AEW championship?
To be honest, I was shocked. It was pretty positive. It was way more positive than I would have thought it would have been. But I think it was more so because they built Christian slowly instead of just throwing him straight into the number one contender spot. So I think it was pretty positive for the most part.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was saying, I think that was more so because they did run the angle with Hangman. So, like, people were more so at ease, like, they were going to get back to the Hangman story with Kenny and not just move him completely out that spot. Because I think maybe if it was just over and Hangman was moving on, I think his reaction might have been a little different.
Sure. Yeah, they didn't definitively say that this was like the all-out main event. They were saying that it's just the number one contender, so that could happen. You know, any of the next couple of weeks could be at Rampage or anytime coming up soon. So the other one I wanted to ask you about, Grant, was that on TV, Lee Johnson got a huge reaction from the crowd along with Miro. Can you talk a little bit about that and the crowd's investment in that match?
Yeah, Lee definitely got a good reaction. I think, from where I was at, I was probably in like third row right next to the entrance, right? Like the vibe I was getting is like people were giving Miro like that big star reaction. But Lee definitely got a whole lot of cheers, and it was for somebody who they're building. I think it's a good sign for them. I mean, it's another young star AEW building up, like. They got a bright future.
Good deal, man.
Yeah. Talk about Jericho for a bit. He opened the show, so it sounded like obviously people were firmly behind him. The match was a little clunky at the beginning, but did everybody come around?
Yeah. Jericho super over, especially first person you seeing come out. I think the crowd, even like the kids, because it was a nice mixture of people in there. I think like a lot of them really appreciated Hoovy. So the match itself got over. So even the clunky moments, I think people were more inclined to forgive them because I think people were kind of feeling like, oh, okay, well, they weren't treating them like they were two old guys. They were treating them like they were big stars and, you know, and nostalgia acts. But, you know, people still were giving them giving them a pass. Like, okay, you know, they're a little older. So the work might not be as crisp as, you know, it was when they were on Nitro 20 years ago.
Right. What was, if you had to, like, speak on behalf of the crowd, what was over as, like, the match of the night?
Let's see, the match of the night. I would have to say the six man with Moxley. They were probably already in the ring when you got it on TV. But the former Everrise team that was on NXT,
mm-hmm.
they got a decent reaction.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Cool, man.
But
then
yeah,
the six
man probably went over there.
Okay. Where were you sitting, just to give a perspective of kind of where you saw everything from?
I was in the third row, fifth seat from the ramp. I was right next to the entrance ramp. So I was, directly in front of the ring, pretty much.
That's great. Cool, man. Yeah. Well, appreciate the call, Grant. Anything else that you had in your notes in terms of stuff that maybe happened, you know, before or after the show or just something memorable? Just kind of keep it open to you. Any final notes?
I know one thing that I definitely did. Like, so for those, the ticket there, right there in the third row, like that close, WWE was just in time. I'm from Detroit, but I traveled down here, but they were just in time for a house show. Tickets for that exact same basic seat pretty much was like $375. With AEW, they made it really reasonable. I was that close for like $100. So that's one thing they definitely got working in their favor is like price point. And then and what else did I got wrote down? Merch. I looked at the merch stand. It was a little light. I was surprised, but it was a lot of AEW branded merchandise. The only things that really stuck out, they had a lot of action figures as far as shirts. Cody and Malakai Black was the only thing that I really noticed.
Okay, cool. What were people wearing in the building? Could you get a sense of that? Like, was there a shirt that you saw more than others?
Let's see, what I saw more than others, I think I saw, like I said, it was a lot of just the plain AEW branded merch, and then it was a lot of the Young Bucks Bullet Club shirts. Kind of think what other shirt did I see? There's a few Cody shirts. You know how you would go to maybe a WWE show and you'll see like a mixture of maybe some old school shirts or stuff like that. It wasn't a lot of that. It was more so all the current wrestlers that's on the AEW roster. Oh, I saw a lot of Darby shirts. I did see a lot of Darby shirts too.
Okay. All right, great. Well, Grant, thanks. Thanks for the time, man. I know you're at the building still, so want to let you go, but certainly appreciate you kind of calling in and kind of being the voice of the room tonight. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. I appreciate it. And everybody, go VIP.
Thank you, Grant. Safe travels home.
No problem.
PWTorch.com/goVIP Take Grant's advice. You won't be disappointed. PWTorch.com/goVIP 347-215-8558. 347-215-8558. If you want to get on the calls here, which we will start up right now, we've got a lot of callers in the queue, which is great. So I want to try to make sure we can get everybody. So try to keep your points to one or two so that we can make sure to squeeze everybody in tonight on what was turned out to be a really kind of busy night with a lot of talking points. So we'll start off with 410. You're up next. 410, state the name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Zach and Joel, how are you? This is Reverend Keith from Baltimore, Maryland.
Reverend Keith, great to talk to you, my friend. What'd you think of Dynamite tonight?
I thought it was a very good show. I really did, from top to bottom. I'm glad that they began with the Jericho-Hoovy match, and I was reading and doing some research and found out that was their first encounter since 1999, those old Nitro days. So, and Hoovy looks good. I mean, you know, he can still bring it because I know he wrestles from time to time on the independent scene. So I thought he looked quite well out there. You know how Hoovy is. But anyway, I just want to mention a few things, and then I'm going to let you guys discuss it and make way for other callers. Now, it's obvious that, you know, with this Five Labors situation with Jericho being brought on by MJF, I think that they're building to, of course, Jericho's going to win them all and then lose it all out to MJF. That's what I'm thinking, to keep the feud going. Now, I really like how they are giving Jericho like an easy one, then they give him, you know, like a tough one. Like next week, I think it's going to be very tough because Wardlow has gotten so much better over the past year. And with MJF in his corner as a referee, might as well say he's going to be in his back pocket. That's going to make it even tougher. So that's going to be like a 2-on-1 situation right there. So it's going to be even tougher. It's going to be a much tougher situation than it was against Hoovy tonight. And then secondly, and my final point is this. It's good to see Red Velvet stepping up to Dr. Britt Baker DMD. However, I think that she's going to be used as a stepping stone for either Thunder Rosa coming out to challenge the doctor at All Out or someone else. I'm thinking they may go towards Thunder Rosa since they built up her signing so well. And she is just so popular right now in the indie scene. And, you know, she runs her own shows through Mission Pro Wrestling. So I wanted to mention that I really like what they're doing with the Five Labor situation with Jericho. And also I think that they are setting up Dr. Britt Baker DMD with a feud with Thunder Rosa, which they had earlier in the year, but no titles were involved back then. And you know how vicious that match was. That was a hardcore match. So I would like to see those two go at it. So let me know your thoughts on my opinions and thoughts on the show tonight. And the guy, Graham, I commend him. I thought he was excellent as an on-site correspondent. And I noticed that everything he was mentioning about the ex-WWE guys, that they were garnering sympathy from the crowd. And that's good because many of them were, you know, they were sent packing and it wasn't right. So thank you for taking my call, guys. Have a wonderful night.
Thanks, Keith. Great to hear from you. And great point. And yes, Grant was fantastic. Let's start with the five labors of Jericho thing, Joel, because I think that's a smart topic and an important one, kind of given where everything's going directionally as we head into All Out. I didn't know how well this was going to get over just because of how just definitive it was in terms of, we know how the story is going to play out. I think for the most part, Jericho is going to make his way through and then face MJF. I thought that was so much a certainty that it would be hard for them to build any kind of drama around these matches. And they've done a nice job. I think the fresh talent that they've brought in to face Jericho has been helpful. You know, the Nick Gage thing obviously lent, you know, itself really a ton of intrigue. So that type of thing has helped a lot. I still think they're on the road to, you know, Jericho making it and getting his match with MJF. But I think overall they've built this in a good way. It's not like too cute. It's pretty straightforward. And the crowd is behind it, which ultimately is the kind of the final grade.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the crowd has been into this, and it's been a fun thing to watch, you know, week to week with a lot of different names that they've been pulling out here, with Nick Gage, obviously, somebody that I don't think anybody was really expecting to see that, and then Juventud Guerrera, you know, going for more of a nostalgic match. And this match tonight, you know, it was a very clunky to start. I was very unsure about it. With a lot of the Hurricanranas. I'm like, ooh, man, is someone going to get injured in this match? But, you know, I thought they actually recovered well and turned it into something that was fun with a cool, you know, flying Judas effect to end the match. But one of the things I was kind of confused about is, I'm not sure if MJF misspoke about it, but it sounded like he was saying that, you know, Wardlow was his next task, and then the fifth chapter would be against MJF himself. But I guess my understanding was that there would be five different opponents before he got to MJF. So that now is a little unclear to me. And then also, you know, having MJF as the referee, I mean, that's what they said before. And then, you know, Jim Ross was saying that MJF would be in his corner, you know, instead of being as the referee. And so there was just a little bit of confusion there. But I think that overall it's been a nice thing to have different opponents. But I think that fans, you know, especially what I saw on Twitter, was that people were a little disappointed that they didn't go to, for the fourth chapter, somebody who was also outside the company. I think people were really looking forward to, you know, AEW bringing in different names that they weren't expecting. But I think that Wardlow is somebody who makes a lot of sense. You know, that they've been building him up as this big monster. Now he's going to have this big match against Jericho with the odds really stacked against him, you know, going against Wardlow and then having MJF, you know, also going to play a big factor into that. So I think that, you know, it's really making it look like, ooh, Jericho is not just going to so easily slide into this. So I would assume there's going to be shenanigans and some, you know, some referee bumps with MJF going down and a lot more to play out next week.
Yeah, they need to put out some sort of social media post or news update saying exactly, you know, what's supposed to happen, you know, now moving forward. Like, because I thought the five labors of Jericho thing was always muddy in terms of, is the fifth one MJF or is it not? And I walk out of this show today still confused as to whether or not that's the situation. So yeah, I don't know if MJF misspoke. I was like you. I thought that, you know, MJF would be the guy that faces Jericho after he completes the five match series. And then yeah, they kind of were inconsistent with what they said MJF's role would be next week. They said his corner, right, to start things off.
Yeah.
And MJR said referee.
Yeah, I thought they started off by saying referee in it. I thought that's what MJF said. And then when they went to the graphic, then they said MJF would just be in his corner. So it's still, either way, it's confusing because they said it both ways.
Yeah. So they should just button up on that so people know what to expect. Because I think it's a lot different watching, you know, Jericho versus Wardlow in this fourth labor of Jericho, knowing that there's a fifth, you know, coming or not. I think that changes kind of the perception of this Wardlow match, because it's, you know, it not being the final match, I think would play better. You know, if everybody has the idea behind them that, okay, we could have one more special appearance by somebody after this.
Yeah.
I think that helps kind of just the perception, but I don't hate the Wardlow idea either. I mean, I think you have to go there with this, you know? So, I mean, he's a guy that, clearly, AEW is working to slowly get into higher positions on the card. He's clearly a project that's been involved in some big angles and some really kind of big matches and some big moments for AEW throughout its history, whether it's with Cody or whether it's with, you know, the feud with Inner Circle. And now, you know, he's a guy that I think they look at as being potentially someone to build around in the future. So this is a good test for him. He looks the part as somebody that can, you know, be a menacing heel opponent for Jericho. So yeah, it's not, you know, a flashy Nick Gage name, but I still think it's really effective in terms of just what the storyline is right now.
Yeah, I mean, if he's trying to make it hard for Jericho, of course he's going to rely on his, you know, big, bad, menacing friend to beat him up.
Right. Right, exactly. So, yeah, I it's not flashy, but I still support it. I think it's the right call. What's your take on Keith's point regarding Britt Baker? Is Thunder Rosa in the cards? I think tonight's segment was kind of a filler segment. I don't think that Red Velvet versus Britt Baker is kind of a long-term play by any means, but I thought, you know, Red Velvet held her own in there, and Britt Baker's going to, you know, go over clean next week without question in my eyes. But so it's a good feud for what it is, but certainly not anything long-term. I think something along the lines of Thunder Rosa certainly is kind of probably more of a popular idea at this point.
Yeah, I think they definitely wanted to give, you know, an AEW Women's Championship match, because that's really what they've been building around these next two shows that are going to be in Pittsburgh, around Britt Baker kind of having this homecoming. So they wanted to do something special for that without giving, you know, one of the big matches away. And so Red Velvet, you know, makes sense as an opponent, as she mentioned that she's been on a 7 straight wins. But I really didn't like her referring to herself as enhancement talent, you know, really kind of talking like, you know, hey, I was an enhancement talent before, you know, really talking meta, like talking about the booking, that I was an enhancement talent before and now I'm an actual main person on the roster, so things are going to be a little bit different, a little bit more competitive. I just didn't like them going there, but I think, you know, just as a setup, I think this is fine to do this, because there's really no one else who stands out too much to me right now it would make sense in this. But Thunder Rosa would be a big matchup, you know, to do something at All Out, because you know, Reverend Keith was saying is that a lot of people are really behind Thunder Rosa. And so that could be a big matchup. But, you know, we really haven't seen too many other people built up to this point. So I think that there's a lot more to be done, and maybe we'll know some more after she has this match with Red Velvet.
Yeah, I agree with you as far as the meta stuff goes. Definitely kind of furrowed my brow and what's okay, just unnecessary, you know, just completely unnecessary. You don't have to have that line in. But at the same time, though, minus that, I think Red Velvet continues to present well as mm-hmm. you know, an up-and-coming talent in the company. She's got a lot of confidence. I think she's got a charisma about her. You know, she still has a long way to go in the ring, but she looks comfortable, you know, on the microphone. And I think that's big, and this will be a good test to see if she can kind of hang with the best of the best in the company.
Yeah, I agree with that. She's got a lot of confidence when she walks to the ring, and definitely as a promo, I think that she has some skills there. And so I definitely want to see how she develops here.
Yeah, yep. Are you kind of firmly in the camp of we need to see Thunder Rosa versus Britt Baker at All Out, or is there somebody else in your head of a direction they could go for a Britt Baker opponent?
You know, as they're trying to get more of Chris Statlander in the fold, I could see that being somebody also who could face Britt Baker as well. But, I mean, honestly, there's not too many people who come to mind that they've been really building around as a babyface who's going to challenge for. You know, we saw a little bit more from Jade Cargill in a little bit of a backstage segment with Mark Sterling, but obviously she's not a babyface. So to this point, I don't think that they've really built up anyone who seems like they could be that opponent. I mean, obviously we saw Layla Hirsch win tonight, but she's going on to face Camille for the NWA Women's Championship. So it's I don't think that that's her. So I mean, yeah, there's just not too many other names that are sticking out to me that they've been building up lately.
Yeah, yeah, me too. So I mean, I think Thunder Rosa is probably the inevitable direction. I thought Britt Baker tonight was Britt Baker, nothing special, but I thought she carried herself as a champion. And if I'm Tony Khan, I mean, you have to start lining up opponents for her. You know, I think she's going to be the champion for quite some time. But you have to be, you know, building opponents to feed her. And yeah, you have the Thunder Rosa card to play. I think they'll play that. But, you know, by the time the next pay-per-view rolls around, you really want to have someone built up that feels fresh, I think.
Absolutely.
We'll go to 336 next. 336, thanks for waiting. 709, we'll go to you after that. But 336, you're up. State your name and where you're calling from tonight.
This is Kevin from North Carolina.
Hey, Kevin, good to talk to you. What did you think of the show?
Well, I think that we'll be seeing replays of that top rope Judas effect for years to come now. That was probably the highlight of the night that, like I said, we'll see for a long time. But my main thing tonight was with Cody. I'm hesitant to say it, but I think that this is the beginning of his heel turn, because the way that the fans were, I was at the show last week in Charlotte, and everybody was passionate about, I mean, even the squash matches for the dark, and whenever they showed Cody up on the screen last week with his headset on backstage, more people were booing him. And then when they fought out there, and I watched it back, and when it went to a commercial, when they were helping Cody to the back, some people, it wasn't a big chant, but some people were chanting, "You deserve it." But I think that Cody in this, and knowing how passionate a big part of the fan base is, I think he knows that more of them's going to turn on him. And I think he was teasing it tonight to anger some people. And I could be totally wrong, but it just...
Yeah, well, I want to just tag Joel in on that, because I think that is a popular opinion, you know, that, hey, this is where Cody's character can go. Joel, watching this tonight, do you get a sense that this is the start of that or kind of a push the other direction? Because I think you could probably make an argument for both.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely, you know, there was nothing about tonight that said, you know, that that's definitely the direction that they're going in, because Cody has even said that, you know, he doesn't have a heel bone in his body. You know, that he doesn't want to turn heel. And so if I'm taking him at face value with that, you know, he definitely wants to continue to be a babyface going forward. But honestly, you know, there's been a lot of times in the past where we've seen him, you know, is he going to turn heel? Is he not? You know, but we'll have to see how the fans continue to react to him, because as Kevin brings up, I do sense that there are more people, you know, who are booing Cody, but also it really depends on going town to town. But then, as Grant was talking about as the on-site correspondent, you know, is it just the opponent in Malakai Black? Is it just that people are really into Black and wanting to see his character and wanting to see what he can do in AEW, where they're willing to play along with this and cheer for Black and boo Cody? You know, I think there remains a lot more to be seen with this.
This will be a really big test. Not a test, but it'll be interesting to watch Tony Khan handle this situation, because he, you know, kind of since the company started, like, not everything has gone according to plan. I mean, you had pivots with Dark Order. You've had pivots with Britt Baker. You've had pivots with a host of other kind of talents like Miro. Just across the board, a lot of like small things, nothing too huge, but, you know, listening to the audience when there was an audience and pivoting, or just kind of going with gut, like, hey, something's not clicking with this Miro thing. Let's get him away from Kip Sabian and put him in a different lane. You know, like, he's been able to kind of mold the way he sees his characters and sees his talent to get them into the best position possible so they can succeed for him as the owner of the company. And now, you know, you've got somebody like Cody, though, who, you know, has power in the company. He's a popular star, big personality, and it'll be interesting to see, like, does Tony Khan kind of recognize the booing and recognize the potential need for a shift, or does he stay the course because Cody, like you said, Joel, just doesn't want to turn heel. He doesn't have a heel bone in his body. I think it's part of the greatness of Dynamite, you know, especially the last couple months, is the booking is lining up with the crowd reactions. And I think the feud will still be fun to watch with Black and Cody, but it'll just be better if things are clearly defined one way or the other. And that might take a Tony Khan pivot, Joel. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they've really been building up Black as a heel character. I mean, that's without question right now. But, you know, right. He is kind of one of those cool heels where people are really into seeing that. And they've seen Cody kind of doing the same shtick for a long time. And I felt like tonight was really the first time in a while that we've seen Cody be a part of something that truly felt important. You know, not to throw more shade at QT, but, you know, with Cody, with all that he's been doing during the pandemic, with Shaq, and QT and, you know, working with a lot of the other guys from Dark. I mean, it just has felt like this is the first time he's really been a part of something that's actually mattered on the roster. And so, yeah, I mean, we'll be interesting to see if Tony Khan decides to do a pivot, because at the end of the day, it's going to be his call and his decision as to what's going to happen with Cody on this. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see as we learn more about where the fans are at with so many of these characters.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, just so everybody knows, Joel told me off the air that he couldn't wait to just totally just crush QT at some point on the show. He's been saving this up all night long.
Zach, you weren't supposed to say that on air.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry about that. Kevin, back to you, man. Any other points tonight?
Well, I've got faith in Tony Khan. He's took and run with stuff that I haven't saw in WWE for a long time, and he's smart, and I think he's going to take things wherever they need to go and do what's best for business. But that's all I've got, fellas. Y'all have a good night, and everybody go VIP.
Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate the call, man. Thank you very much. We'll move next to 709. 709, you're up. State your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, gentlemen, it's Chris from Mount Pearl, Newfoundland. How are we doing this evening?
Doing good, Chris. How are you? What did you think of Dynamite?
I think I saw it kind of different from you guys. I didn't see this as a filler show at all. In fact, I was watching it with a friend of mine, and about 45 minutes left in the show, he messaged me and was like, I've been enjoying the show so much, I completely forgot we still have Cody versus Black to come. And I had to agree with him. Like, everything on this show just clicked for me. I think part of that, and this is kind of the first thing I wanted to touch on, is I may be the biggest 2.0 fan on the planet, and I've been a fan of theirs ever since they cut a promo in Chikara where they ended it with the words, "Booyah, let's get out of the bathroom." And like, I don't know what it is about their promo style.
Well, I'll quit.
I mean, how can you not love that, right? But, yeah, they are hands down one of my favorite underrated teams in wrestling, and I'm really glad to see they got this shot. The biggest thing I saw from that match, though, is Daniel Garcia. I've never heard of this guy before, but I got some serious American Dragon vibes, kind of also some low-key vibes. Do either of you know anything about this guy, like where he comes from, what his background is? Because in 3-4 years' time, I see this guy as a major player. He just exudes danger, and he seems like he really gets it.
Low-key is a really good comparison. That's really spot on, I think, in a lot of ways. Maybe even more so than Danielson, just because you, like you said, there is that danger element of you don't know what that dude's going to – what that guy's going to do. I don't know too much about him for his history. Joel, do you?
No, actually, this is the first time that I've seen him.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's definitely an aura there. You know, I don't want to overstate it too much because it's one night, but tonight he certainly looked the part.
Yeah, the guy, he has something. I've been really bad with my calls recently, my called shots. I'm going to call a shot on this. I think my guy's going places. If you're not watching it, by the way, 2.0 has a show on YouTube that comes out Saturday mornings. It is absolutely worth watching. It is ridiculous and hilarious, and those guys are super talented. So give those guys a look. Apart from the fact that I think I am to Christian as Nick Barbati is to Edge, in that I never want to talk about him and I wish he would go away, the Miro-Lee Johnson match, I thought that was an absolute star-making performance from Lee Johnson. I thought that was going to be a squash, but there were points in that match where even a 30-plus year wrestling fan who is incredibly jaded and calls things way before they happen, I actually thought he might have a shot of pulling up an upset. Just maybe they were going to push Miro to be the first opponent for Adam Page or something, but he had believable near falls, the whole register but don't sell thing that Miro was doing, and he just seemed really good. The other problem with that match, and I'm going to pull a Wade into a compound question here, there was a guy opposite the hard camera with some of the funniest signs I have ever seen at a wrestling show.
Yeah.
I don't know if either of you caught it. But one of them was like, "Dear God, please don't let your chosen champion kill Big Shoddy. We kind of like him." And then there was one that's like, honestly, thinking that AEW pays Meltzer and the other guy whose name I can't remember, Alvarez, is kind of silly. Reading is your friend. I'm just like, this guy is a genius and needs to be front row at every show.
And there was something about Miro's wife, too, on one of them. I don't remember exactly what it was, but that was fantastic. I love that.
Vince McMahon would have kicked that guy out about 3 minutes into the show.
He wouldn't have got in the WWE show.
No, but I'm glad you brought up the Miro match with Lee Johnson, because I thought it was a really well-wrestled match, top to bottom. Crowd was into it. Johnson was great. The guy that stood out in that, though, to me was Miro in particular. I mean, he really helped. And Johnson did his part, too, no question. But as kind of the monster heel and the focus of the match, he did a really nice job of maintaining kind of the spot and the role and the character that he had to maintain, while also doing what he needed to do to help get Johnson over. I thought it was really just great work from him, Joel, in that match, on top of what Johnson brought, too.
Yeah, Miro is on, like, another level of confidence. I mean, like, you think back to his end of his run in WWE, where it was just kind of like this broken man, you know, how they were really screwing with him with Lashley and his wife Lana. And now he's just has hit, like, this new level of supreme confidence, and that's really what they're playing into his character. But I liked what they did with Lee, you know, that there was a lot of people who were saying, you know, oh, man, they should have just totally squashed Lee Johnson. It doesn't make any sense. But, you know, really the story with him is that, you know, they played it right where the fans were really into this. I mean, this was booked correctly, but if Lee Johnson is making constant improvement, you know, in that he has been squashed in the past, and that's what you were expecting to see here, but he has been working with Dustin Rhodes, who has been booked fairly well, you know, in his matches, and we're seeing this improvement with this guy, and it correlates with the fan response. And so I just thought that Tony Khan totally read the situation correctly, because, you know, Lee Johnson was kind of the AEW dark, you know, warrior, and he was in a lot of matches there in Jacksonville. And so people got used to seeing him and getting over with him. So I just thought it was very well done.
Yeah, I mean, it's not as easy as it looks to pull something like that off, where you've got Miro, who has to, you know, be strong without question. I mean, he's the champion. He's the guy that's, you know, going on to big things in the immediate future. But to be able to balance that along with, hey, telling the story of Lee Johnson at the same time, I mean, it takes a really solid worker, a really confident worker in there, and good booking. And I thought all of that was present for Johnson. I mean, the next step is defining a character of some kind. I mean, he can't be, you know, just a product of Cody and Dustin for forever. Like, I think he's got to start finding that voice a little bit, finding that character, finding that personality on the microphone, and kind of just starting to build himself up to the next level. It takes time for sure, but I think that's the next step, because clearly he can bring it inside the ring. Chris, back to you.
Are you suggesting Big Shoddy isn't a character? Shame on you. A couple of quick things before I go to a final question to leave you on. A four-person booth on Friday, good luck, Excalibur. Can we please shoot horny JR out of a cannon towards the sun? If I never hear him talking about talented women again, it'll be too soon. If you showed somebody who didn't know any of the wrestlers that opening match, they would think that Juventud was the biggest star and that Jericho was the guy being brought back for a one time only. And the last thing I wanted to ask you guys, and I'll leave you on this, the Bucks did the whole we've got nobody left thing. So who's coming in to face them? Because it's not going to be Santana Ortiz. It's not going to be Best Friends. It's got to be somebody that we're not predicting or not seeing. So who's it going to be? I'll take that one off the air, gentlemen, so other people can get in. Enjoy the rest of your night. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, Chris, thanks for making it, as always. Great to chat with you. Yeah, Joel, that's the first thing that popped into my head. Who faces them? I'll throw to you first, just so you know we don't hedge on Chris's question. What do you think?
Well, I mean, it's you know, the bigger question is, you know, the AEW championship. You know, there has been reports that, you know, Hangman Page is out of that title picture for the upcoming pay-per-view. I'd assume that, you know, with the news of CM Punk, that's probably, you know, shaking some plans up that they previously had. But, I mean, the way I interpret it is that, you know, he took multiple BTE triggers. And then Frankie Kazarian, you know, was the other guy who kind of stepped in to help him a little bit. So it's possible that we see, you know, Hangman Page and Frankie Kazarian taking on the Young Bucks at the pay-per-view.
Yeah, definitely. I kind of stopped at the first one. You know, I think, I mean, what about Punk and Page teaming up against the Young Bucks? That could be something that happens too. It protects Punk a little bit into the return match, still positions Page on Darby and Punk. That's another one. Yeah. I mean, I have to think at this point, like, they don't, if I almost think that match Young Bucks versus somebody and Punk has to be top of mind if Punk's coming in. Cause I mean, at this point, there's no real singles, like solo opponent, one-on-one opponent you could give him. I guess you could go to Kenny Omega fast, but it's a short build to that if you go that direction. A tag team match for his first match in the company protects him a bit, and he's got, you know, a lot of talent around him for his first match back, so that helps. I it's not kind of like the flashiest of options, Punk in a tag team match, but it may be kind of the most prudent at this time, and the Young Bucks are a big act.
Yeah, and you know, the more I think about it too, I mean, because it's going to be at United Center, right, the home of the Chicago Bulls, and you know, that's really been the act that the Elite have been playing up, is this whole basketball thing, right?
So
I definitely could see that, you know, kind of tying into it, where they're like, hey, we're the Elite, we're here finally, you know, the All-Stars are here, and then here comes Punk crashing in with the Cult of Personality, you know, and maybe that's the way that they get him lined up with Hangman Page. And I think that would be a huge match for them to do. Obviously any of CM Punk's first matches is going to be great, but I mean, it's been 6 years since he last was in, you know, that Royal Rumble match for WWE. And I don't know, you know, what Punk's condition is going to be like. He hasn't wrestled a match in quite some time. And we saw, you know, Christian take a lot of time out and then be able to come back, and he looked pretty good in his shape. But, you know, I think that probably putting Punk into a tag team match where you can protect him a little bit, especially against somebody like the Young Bucks, you know, the Young Bucks don't have bad matches. You know, so it ain't going to be a stinker for Punk. It's going to be, you know, a phenomenal match, you know, regardless of how much he's actually involved in the action. But the more I think about it, I think that really makes a lot of sense, doing the Young Bucks versus Punk and Hangman Page or Darby Allin or somebody else against the Young Bucks.
Yeah. So there you go, Chris. There's our vote. You can hold us to that for the next couple of weeks. That's even if Punk comes in, I guess that's,
What a disaster if that doesn't happen.
Oh, yes. Boy, that will be quite the post show if that never comes to fruition. That's the plan. Yep, that's the plan. It'll be kind of a game time-ish call, depending on how this pesky Delta variant plays here for the next couple of weeks. But that's the plan. Yep, absolutely.
All right,
let's keep it rolling here with the call. 760, you are up next. 760, thanks for calling, and state your name and where you're calling from.
How's it going? This is Edward calling from High Desert, California. How you guys doing?
Good, Edward. Great to hear from you.
Sorry. Overall, I thought the show, like, for Dynamite was, I'd say for Dynamite, it felt kind of bad, but overall, you know, it felt very blah. Like, if you didn't watch this week, you don't need to go back and check anything. And I think the theme show, like, it's Homecoming. I mean, they were gone, what, 2 weeks, 3 weeks? I think if they're going to keep doing themed shows with that type of stuff, they definitely need to deliver more. But I would just go with the first match and the last match. I thought, yeah, Jericho and Hoovy weren't – that was like a match in slow motion. It wasn't good. And I almost feel like the five labors is now two – was it two many, I guess it would be? Does that make sense to say it that way? Like, the next one is Wardlow and then MJF. It kind of fell flat. Like, you know, I know they had the two surprises with Gage and Hoovy, but I don't know. It just kind of, all of a sudden, it just felt to me like it kind of hit a wall.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely could see how you would have that perspective, especially given that you're coming off of, you know, Nick Gage and Hoovy, and now you're at Wardlow. I mean, it's hard to keep, you know, a fever pitch through that type of thing. And they had a lot of time to fill in terms of just weeks of television before All Out. So I'm certainly higher on it than you are, Joel. What your take on that point? Is it, I don't think it's necessarily fizzling out, slowing down a bit. Yes. But I'm still expecting a big angle, you know, with this Wardlow MJF thing in whatever iteration it is to keep the whole idea hot. But yeah, Wardlow, not, as I said at the top of the show, not a flashy opponent to be sure.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's still, you know, it's fine, you know, as it keeps going, like we said before, is that Wardlow makes sense as an opponent. But I think really what's affecting a lot of people's perception of this is, you know, having Nick Gage in this death match happening so early within the labors. I mean, with how bloody and gruesome that match was, I mean, you would think that would be chapter five. You know, the last one is getting past the king of the death match, Nick Gage. And so then everyone after that is kind of like, meh. You know, Hoopitude, kind of cool to see, you know, a guy we haven't seen in very long. Then Wardlow is a guy that we see, you know, pretty often. You know, and then Chapter 5, like we said, we're not sure if that is MJF himself or if there's somebody else. So, I mean, it just feels like if they had done it in a different order by making Nick Gage, you know, one of the last people to go through, that, you know, it would start feel like it was picking up steam instead of kind of, you know, going in a downward trajectory from who we've been seeing.
Yeah, I think that in terms of your point, Edward, about the overall kind of pace and pitch of the show, Dynamite has been a very hot show the last 2 weeks in particular. I mean, back to back, just sizzling episodes. And what I meant by filler this week was it just wasn't that. It still was a really good show top to bottom, and I think it was a newsworthy show in a lot of ways, but you're not going to be able to keep that type of level, you know, week in and week out. You're going to have ups, you're going to have downs. You just don't want to have, you know, 6 weeks worth of Monday Night Raws back to back to back. You know, that's not momentum. I think you're going to have an ebb and flow, though. It's hard to have that type of show and buzz on a week to week basis. And I think tonight was a good show, Joel, but yeah, probably a notch down on the kind of the volume.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they had some really great shows, you know, the past couple of weeks going back on the road that they wanted to make them into big deals with the Fyter Fest and Fight for the Fallen, which were all, you know, really blow away great shows. And this wasn't a bad show by any means, but it was really, you know, kind of more of the reset show where we had some great banger shows that were just high pace, high intensity, great matches, great content all throughout. You know, and then now this week they have to do a little bit of a reset, you know, and where it was really storyline driven with the stuff with Hangman Page and stuff that you saw with Britt Baker, Christian Cage, you know, being the number one contender, because over the next 4 weeks, they're going to be building up to the All Out show. So, you know, I mean, that was totally fine for me and something that I did expect, you know, to not be this big over the top show, because now they have to start building towards their next big one.
Yeah, yeah. Edward, back to you.
I definitely understand they can't, you know, run 100 miles an hour through the wall every week. No, I get that. It's more or less because they throw, you know, the theme show Homecoming and kind of push it. It's like, it feels that way. But no, overall, yeah, like I said, it felt blah to me, but it wasn't like I thought it was. For Dynamite, I'd say bad, but generally, no, it wasn't a bad show. With Cody there, I mean, he favored his leg at the beginning. Then he went through the table. Okay, then he loses the match. And then he pops right up afterwards, and then he kind of got dominated, but, you know, he kind of not quite. He didn't quite, you know, fully sell it or whatever. And then the promo, the only thing I could think of with that is somebody else hit on it, he's changing, you know, the whatever he is, is it the iteration of Cody Rhodes as he is right now, whatever that is going to change to whoever. But that, I don't know, that totally missed the mark. It makes no sense. I mean, it was as if he wrestled the match and then he's just talking out of left field. And it's like, what are you talking about? Why would he retire all of a sudden? Why, you know, it seemed, I don't know, it kind of felt like it was trying too hard for, I guess, to be that, I don't know if it's a shock moment or surprise or whatnot. And the last thing was, I get it, and I don't think it's a bad thing, but does everybody have, like, two or three peripheral people around him? I mean, like, you know, I know there's a dynamic to it, and it definitely helps and puts people in spots and can help you, you know, help deflect from somebody being out there too much, but everybody has two or three people with them. And I don't know, like, I just noticed that. I'm not saying it's necessarily negative, and I can see a lot of good with it, but it's just like everybody has two or three or four people, or in Omega's case, I don't know, eight people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they have not shied away, Edward, from, you know, building these factions up, and not like tried and true factions like the Elite, but just groups. You've got Death Triangle, you've got the Elite, you've got Dark Order, you've got the Factory, you've got the Matt Hardy group. I mean, they're all around, you know, the show. I mean, it's very much a focus of how, you know, how Tony Khan's presenting his company and the talent in his company. So, like, sometimes it can be a bit overdone when you've got everybody in a faction. And then even the ones that aren't, Darby Allin's coming out with Sting, Moxley and Kingston are, you know, attached together. So, you know, so yeah, I mean, I'm okay with it, 'cause I don't mind the faction thing. You know, I really don't. I think it provides a lot of different angles for a lot of these guys to work fresh matches. But if you're not a fan of that, it probably can be a little grating, Joel.
Yeah, I mean, I like the fact that guys are building alliances with each other. I mean, the one thing that I see as a negative with it is that I always just associate with, like, okay, if they're going to have some people come out with them, there's probably going to be interference of some sort, you know, and that's the kind of stuff that I really don't want to see. But I feel like for the most part, AEW has been good about that. You know, it definitely hasn't tipped into the New Japan Bullet Club, you know, type stuff that has really brought down a lot of that promotion, you know, by having just this constant interference and stuff. But, you know, I don't think it's a bad thing as a philosophy to have a lot of different factions and having different stars rub shoulders with each other, you know, especially with Darby Allin. You know, it's like he's got some sort of alliance with John Moxley and Eddie Kingston. You know, they don't always have to be associated with each other, but they mutually have respect for one another and they have each other back. You know, so you can expect at some point down the line, you know, if Darby needs some backup, he might be calling up Moxley or Kingston, you know. But overall, I just don't want to see as much, you know, interference. So, you know, so it's a double-edged sword for me.
Yeah. And to Edward, your point on the Cody thing at the end, I'm very much more in your camp than I think even Joel and maybe some others. It didn't work fully for me either. And I definitely want to go back and rewatch it. It felt a little out of place. Like it felt like they were just trying to add kind of like added Cody drama, personal Cody drama forced into a storyline that I just don't think needed it, you know? And we'll see, like, and as I stipulated at the top, it's all in the follow-up, like what happens with Black, what happens with Cody next, you know, we have to watch that. But tonight, even though, you know, Cody was believable in terms of how he was presenting retirement, he was believable with his emotions. And I thought he carried the execution well. I just don't – I just never got the sense that, A, it was actually going to happen, and, B, that it fit kind of this blood, aggressive, brawling feud that these two had. So, Edward, I'd say let's wait and see. But I went with you tonight. But Joel, go ahead and defend your point a little more, because I think I'm feeling like I'm in the minority on this one, though.
Well, I mean, we keep saying it, but I want to see the follow-up. I want to see if Cody is asked about this. You know, are they going to question him about, hey, you said that you were going to retire. Is that still in the plans here? Have things changed now? Was this always your plan to retire after this match? So I think that, you know, a good in-depth sit-down interview with Jim Ross is going to put a lot more of that into context.
Yeah, yep, absolutely. Edward, thanks. Appreciate it. Any final topics?
No, that was it. That was the last one. I won't keep you any longer. I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Thanks a bunch. Appreciate the call. We go next to 434. 434, you're up. State your name and where you're calling from.
This is Keith from Virginia.
Hey, Keith. How are you tonight? Thanks for calling. What did you think of the show?
I like the show a lot. And I guess my main point is I've listened to the show. I'm stunned at the reactions to the final match. I thought it was amazing. I thought everything just clicked and made sense. I mean, Malakai Black, you have a guy coming in here with something to prove, and he's like, I'm not paying dues. I'm going right at the top guy, and he does. And Cody didn't come out there to retire. He came out there to be competitive, and he failed. He beat him so badly that he had to be helped up. And here's a guy, he's half concussed, and all he can think about is, you know, he's being pulled in these different directions. And he got beat so badly that he's like, I don't know that I want to do this anymore. The only way for me to proceed is to maybe quit. This is a guy, you know, he has a newborn child to think about, and, you know, he's not even a gripe anymore because Malakai beat him so soundly. He can't say, he can't be angry about it, but the sadistic man who came to prove himself sees Cody taking back the narrative, and he can't have it. He has to attack him. Now you set up a situation where Cody, he can't go out looking that weak and pathetic. Now he has to get revenge. I just thought it was amazing. I see people are more down on it, but I don't know. I liked it a lot. What do you think?
Hey, you put forth a great argument. You know, a great argument in favor. I don't. To me, it just I couldn't get that. That sense, really, it felt to me like, okay, you know, he had this match, and now he had this kind of retirement thing planned, win or lose. That's kind of how, my take was it out of the gate. And again, I'm definitely going to go back and watch this thing because of the mixed opinions that we're getting on this show and that, you know, that I'm seeing, because I definitely want to give it another look. But Joel, I mean, I think that's a viable story to tell if they tell it the way Keith outlined.
Yeah, I mean, like, and also, I mean, because they wanted to make it this big surprise that it doesn't end, you know, right at the end of the show, like every other match does, where it goes off the air, you know, the match ends, you know, with a minute or two left on the show. And so, of course, Cody's got to do something to fill up some time, right? You know, because what else are they going to have if they're going to shock the crowd with this short match? So, you know, I thought it worked, you know, in the moment, but the more you think about it, it's kind of like this would make more sense, you know, if he had beaten him like this, but they needed something to fill up the show. But, you know, if he went on next week or 2 weeks from now and Cody said, you know, I've really been thinking about this. I've been thinking about this loss to Malakai Black and how embarrassed I was, you know, at the end of Dynamite, and then to have Black come out and beat him, you know, if Cody was then, you know, going to do the same thing with the retirement. So, I mean, I think that if you were to do it, you know, a couple weeks down the road, it would make a lot more sense. But the way that they did it tonight, I mean, it worked for me, you know, putting it back onto Black. But, you know, we keep talking about it's going to be the follow-up.
Yeah, yeah. And I wanted to say, too, Keith, I and Joel too, the match itself I thought was really well done. I mean, it was a great showcase for Malakai Black for sure. And Cody played his part, and I mean, if nothing else, you know, love him, hate him, whatever, he's a credible talent in that ring, you know, when he's in there. And so for Black to beat him the way that he did, you know, with the real kind of stiff ending and that move, you know, that I thought was incredibly effective and a great foundation for Black to build on, you know, here now moving forward, you know, obviously with Cody, but even after that, it's just a great way to introduce him to the AEW audience. Keith, back to you. Anything else tonight?
I just wanted to follow up. You know, if Cody wanted to use this to, you know, have a heel turn, I think that's even set up pretty well. I mean, he comes to avenge the attack. You know, he puts his heart and soul into it, and he loses again. So now you have him questioning everything, and that's the heel turn. He decides to throw his principles right out of the window. I think that can work. Different directions they can go in. But I enjoyed the show. I was hoping Jericho's final labor was going to be Paul White, because you have these different eras. Mm-hmm. You have the Lionheart, Nick Gage, Painmaker. You have Sean Spears representing now. So you have the WWE era. I would have thought it would have been Paul White. I was almost sure of it, but I guess not. Anyway, thanks, guys. You have a good night.
Thank you, Keith. Great call, and just good analysis of that situation. We'll have to see how it plays out. And again, I'm definitely gonna have to watch this back, because there's certainly some nuances, Joel, that I missed on the first watch. But that's why we do what we do here on the Pope Show.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to 781 next. 781, you are up. Please state your name and where you're calling us from tonight.
Hi, this is Bryant in Boston. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good, Bryant. Thanks for the call. What did you think of Dynamite?
I thought it was a solid show. I mean, the wrestling on the show wasn't, you know, particularly outstanding or anything. I think it was good from like a building storyline sort of thing, like between like the vignettes they had between Ryan Cage and Ricky Starks, and that was really good. I'm assuming those two are probably going to go one-on-one at All Out, that would be my guess. So I really like that. The Elite in it versus Adam Page promo is pretty good. My guess on that one is, and I have no idea how CM Punk and Bryan Danielson are going to fit into this, but my guess is they're probably building up Page versus Omega at Full Gear, I think, which is the November pay-per-view, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. My guess is, and this is just a guess, I'm not sure. My guess is that it's going to be Page versus Omega there, and that's where Page will beat him to get the belt. And that's just my thought. I have no idea if that's going to happen or not. But one thing I will say is I am not excited to see Christian versus Kenny Omega. That's probably Christian's an okay wrestler, you know, great promo and stuff, but signing him I think was a mistake. The guy's 47. I mean, I don't know, I'm not excited for that at all, but go ahead.
Let's grab that one real quick, Brian, because we haven't talked too much about Christian, and he had a big night. You know, he had a decent match out there for sure, but the big news is named officially, you know, the number one contender to Kenny Omega and the AEW World Championship. Joel, where are you at on Christian? Because I'm sitting here and it's just, you know, on paper, it's fine. I think it's just kind of fine. And that's just my take on him at this point. His entire AEW run, it's just kind of fine. It's there. It's okay. It's kind of nice here and there, and it's good to see him, but there's nothing impactful here. Like there's not, I don't sense any kind of building passion for him or for a run at the top. He's just kind of merged into the traffic of AEW, And yeah, he's undefeated, and yeah, he's kind of a former WWE name, of course, but I just am not sensing just any sort of momentum around him right now. So he's going to face Kenny Omega, but that's it. Yeah, yeah, jump in, Brian.
Just before you continue there for a brief moment, I bought the Double or Nothing PPV, and it was an amazing show, and I was considering buying All Out, you know, because I thought there was, you know, because I love Britt Baker, she's my favorite wrestler in the company, you know, and I want to see her and stuff. But if the main event's going to be Christian versus Kenny Omega, I'm out. I'm not buying the pay-per-view if that's the main event. I mean, that's terrible.
Like, yeah.
I'm not buying the PPV if that's the case.
Well, and that's kind of where I'm coming at from, is that it's like they haven't announced that he's exactly going to face him at the pay-per-view. So it's still possible that this could be, you know, something for Rampage. You know, it could be at the United Center. That could be the main event there possibly. But if it is
maybe
at the pay-per-view, I think that that's definitely not going to be the last match to go on at the show. I think it's going to be that tag match, you know, like we proposed the idea of, you know, CM Punk versus the Young Bucks or something like that. I think that whatever CM Punk is involved with has to be the last thing that's going to happen at the All Out show. So maybe that's you know, the justification for it. You know, of course, I agree with you guys that, you know, Christian just – there's nothing – He's exactly that. He's just fine. You know, like, you watch all of his matches, and just like tonight where it's like, yeah, it was a good, solid match, but all of Christian's matches are largely the same, you know, where he gets beat up quite a bit, and then he just kind of, you know, he's sweating a ton, and then he comes back, and he hits a couple moves, and then out of nowhere, the guy gets the win. I mean, it is pretty formulaic, all of his matches. And so, I mean, I just don't know how you can really get behind that, you know, especially thinking of a Kenny Omega match with him. I mean, he's not going to be able to keep up with the guy whatsoever. You know, so it's just nothing that's, you know, thrills me at all to see. But I know that Tony Khan was really high on him when he came into the company. He talked about a huge signing with this guy, and it seems like he was kind of cooling off with him as people were, you know, giving the same kind of reaction we are on the post show. But now it kind of feels like, man, I promised this guy this big match against Kenny Omega, and I've been teasing it, and so now I kind of have to give it to him. You know, so I mean, there's a lot of different directions it can go. I mean, certainly I don't see Christian winning the championship whatsoever.
No,
but you know, if it is something, you know, with CM Punk, that's the only justification I could see, is, you know, wanting to make it a lesser title match so that they can move Punk into that main event
tonight. I think they did. Go ahead, Brent.
Oh, sorry. Well, one thing I'm wondering is maybe if Khan had the idea of the Page Omega match being an All Out, but maybe he changed his mind to put it further down the road when Punk and Danielson decided to sign. I'm wondering. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
I mean, for sure, and honestly, it's a smart move. You know, it's a smart call. Like, you don't want to
agree.
As much as, like, nobody really is pining for Christian versus Kenny Omega, like, it's a fine, like, undercard championship match on that show, provided there's something else on top that's going to drive a lot of intrigue, which a CM Punk or a Bryan Danielson would. So, and you don't want to compound CM Punk's return to wrestling and, you know, the big Adam Page win at the same time on the same show. You don't want to have like that kind of subdued in any way by CM Punk. It's a top storyline and really one of the most kind of intriguing long-term stories that AEW has going. And so tonight, the good thing about the show tonight concerning Paige, even with the Christian announcement, is that's still the story. Paige versus Omega. I mean, that's clearly still where they're going. That was made clear with the angle. And so now we're, you know, just driving a little bit of it in a different direction down the road. I think the end point is still the same. And I felt today on the show that Tony Khan and AEW went out of the way to make sure that the audience knew that. Like, this is still the prominent story. Yes, Christian's the number one contender, but, you know, this is still the world title storyline is still Adam Page and Omega. Joel?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. That I think that they wanted to make it clear to people that this is still, you know, ultimately the destination, you know, whether it's whether it is still All Out or if it goes to full gear. But, I mean, if you think about it, like, man, we keep talking about Punk and Danielson too, but if you had Punk and Danielson team together against the Young Bucks, I mean, that absolutely has to be your main event match. I mean, that's the crowd reaction in Chicago for that, I mean, would blow anything else on the show out of the water.
The question on that is, do they have Punk and Danielson win the tag titles? That's my question.
I don't know.
That's a great question. I mean, yeah, do you want to have them come in and lose? I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't think so.
Because the Young Bucks have actually held the tag titles since they've held it for almost, what, 9 months now? Something like that? Because I think
they won it full gear, I believe.
Full gear, yeah. So they've held it for almost coming on almost a year. So that's kind of an interesting thing. But if you don't mind, I'd kind of like to chime in on the Malachi Black Cody Rhodes match, because I know that's what everyone's talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
I'm kind of divided on it. I personally, it really elevated Black, to say the least, but I believe the reason why they had, because if you recall around this time last year, Cody Rhodes got his ass kicked by Brody Lee, because I believe he's going, I think he's going to be away for a few weeks off television because he's taping that TBS show that he does with Jennifer Nettles. And I think that's why they're doing it, because it was around this time last year that he was doing that. So maybe he pre-taped some interviews or something, but I don't think he's going to be on live television for the next few weeks. But so I think this was kind of a stopgap until he comes back. But I think the match itself, it wasn't bad, but I think it could have lasted a little longer, been a bit more competitive, because, you know, if Malachi Black winning in dominant fashion is great, but if you have him win in a somewhat competitive match against one of these top guys, I think that raises him even more. So I think because I really hope they're not going the same route that they went with Brody Lee last year, where Cody Rhodes just comes back and kicks his ass in a dog collar match, because we don't need that.
No.
Go ahead.
No, I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah, I think it should have been more competitive, but, you know, it got Black over, and, you know, it gave Cody Rhodes kind of the out he needed to be away from television for a few weeks, maybe a month or so, while he tapes that show. So it's kind of a middling grade for me. It should have been, I think it probably should have been about a 10-minute match, not like 3 minutes like it was.
Yeah, the match itself, I didn't have a problem with. Like, I thought that was well done. It was just the retirement that had me kind of going, okay, not sure how I feel about that. But the match itself, I thought that was okay. Not okay. Well done, top to bottom.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
Anything else for us tonight, Brian?
Just one last thing, and I'll be quick about it because I know Javier is probably chomping at the bit. Yeah. The Britt Baker promo, great as usual. I like that they have her on television every week, and I was kind of surprised that they brought out Red Velvet, and I think she acquitted herself pretty well on the mic. So that's a match I'm actually looking forward to, because she had a pretty great match with Serena Deeb back a few months ago. So I have to admit, I was kind of expecting Thunder Rosa to come out and for Thunder Rosa and Britt Baker at All Out, but maybe they're saving that for somewhere down the line. So I thought that was a good segment. It was certainly better than watching the Bunny wrestle again. But because I remember a couple of weeks ago, I had mentioned that, you know, with their women's roster being kind of short, and now apparently with the rumored signing of Ruby Soho, and I had mentioned that maybe they should look at making more use of NWA and TNA talent, if And I had mentioned Camille, and lo and behold, Camille's on the show tonight. So kind of weird how that works. All right, I'll let you guys go, and thanks for taking my call tonight.
I appreciate it, Brian. Thanks for making it. Great topics as usual. We actually got an email that came in from Grant, our on-site correspondent, that I want to read in regards to Camille. He just said, I forgot to say that the only thing that didn't come across well was that I don't think many people in the crowd knew who Camille was from NWA Power. So that segment came off really flat. It seemed that way, Joel, on TV too. I think if you knew who she was, then I think it was probably somewhat impactful, or at least you kind of can just tip your hat and go, all right, nice touch, special appearance from the NWA. If you didn't, though, it had to seem like a really random, a totally random kind of appearance. But man, what stood out to me from that, though, whether you knew her or not, the size difference between was just unbelievable. I mean, unbelievable.
Yeah, I saw on Twitter there was a picture comparing, Layla Hirsch with Camille, and then side by side next to it was the Rey Mysterio and the Great Khali photo, and it's not too far off. It's not too far off as the size comparison goes. I thought it was cool that they brought in Camille because obviously I've seen NWA Power, I'm familiar with her, but yeah, that's a great point that Grant brings up, that this probably looked like just this random giant person, who came into the ring. So, that's kind of the thing, is that I want to see more of the NWA women being brought in, some more of Impact, because we're trying to think of who are some other opponents for Britt Baker. And to this point, I mean, she's kind of gone through, the main players like Hikaru Shida, where there's not too many other people left, where it's like Red Velvet, makes sense to do something on TV because they're going to Pittsburgh. But Thunder Rosa is, of course, the one in their back pocket to go back to after their fantastic hardcore match they had a while back.
Yeah. And I think, AEW, they're going to bring in these kind of acts from other companies, whether it's Impact or New Japan or NWA, you don't need to spend a lot of time on them. And maybe it is just kind of the commentary team with a couple sentences, but, and obviously the commentary wouldn't help people in the building, but you do want to explain the significance of these different talents that are in your ring, cause they're going to get a reaction from some of the crowd, but there's a lot of people that don't watch NWA Power, in this case. And so, defining these surprises either after the fact or, promoting them ahead of time, I think will help them so that you don't have a confused audience. Now, do I think that's going to be a major, major issue? Am I a little bit nitpicking with it? Sure. But as the AEW audience grows, like holistically, you're going to be bringing in fans who aren't tapped into the intricacies of New Japan or NWA. And so you don't want to turn those folks off by not explaining who these different talents are.
Yeah, exactly. As they continue to grow, they just need to be sure that they're thoroughly explaining, who a lot of these people are, and they just can't rely upon the fact that, they're a large part of their fan base right now, is familiar, at least familiar, with a lot of these other products and wrestlers across these different promotions.
Yeah. Yep. Well said. Let's go to 816. 816, thanks so much for waiting. Appreciate it. State your name and where you're calling from.
Greg in Kansas City.
Hey, Greg. Thanks so much for holding, man. Appreciate it. What did you think of the show tonight?
Yeah, no problem. I'm going to give off a few quick thoughts, and I wanted to go back to the Cody segment and then maybe one more thought after that. As far as the show goes, I thought the show was okay. It's probably been the weakest since going back to crowds, and, that's not necessarily a bad thing. A few of the positives of the show, I would say, would be that I thought Miro versus Lee Johnson and Christian versus Blade were very solid in terms of in-ring, and I liked it. In terms of AEW, it feels like everybody's used, in terms of, there's callbacks to the storylines. Like, you know, the guys who aren't on TV, I like the balancing out of, like, doing promos when people aren't on TV every week, like Cage and Starks or the Andrade stuff, even though that's not exactly lighting the world on fire, in my opinion. You know, they're still reminding you that these storylines are going on and these people are here. So I really like that about the show. And I will say about the Paige thing, you guys could very well be right that it's still being held off in, like, in the back pocket in terms of the new signees coming in, but there has to be a good payoff to this after the segment tonight. There has to be a good payoff to that, and I like the suggestion of either Paige and Punk or Punk and Daniel or Bryan Danielson teaming up against the Young Bucks. I think Adam Page and CM Punk in a one-off against the Young Bucks would be really good. I don't know if you go in that direction, but I like that idea. And then a few other thoughts as far as the rest of the show. The Jericho match I thought was not good at all. It's like Jericho needs to be in the ring with with people who don't make him look like he's as old as he is, basically. And the last few weeks haven't been good in that regard. Good ending though, and that storyline continues to flow along pretty solidly and logically. And then the women's segments, I think that I like Red Velvet getting on TV. I met her at the Waterloo Iowa Hall of Fame. She seems like a very sweet person. I got a chance to talk with her a little bit. And the only disappointment to that would be that she's garnered up with winning streaks. She's getting a title shot, but it's all going to be for a match she's obviously going to lose, and this would get Britt over. And I will say, like, with Britt, I mean, she's a heel, but also, you know, they're setting her up to get cheered in Pittsburgh. And so it's an interesting dynamic with that. And my other thought is that it was nice to see Layla Hirsch get on TV. And I will say, though, I've been critical of the women's booking. I would like to see more women's segments and matches featured that don't involve Orange Cassidy, because sometimes it seems like, you know, the segments are to throw, you know, Orange Cassidy out there, like if Statlander wrestles her tonight with Layla Hirsch saying she has a best friend to watch her back. So it's, you know, that would be a Statlander and Nyla Rose seems like another reason to get Orange Cassidy on TV, but there are signs of potential improvement coming in terms of, so we'll see, like, if this picks up after this week and going into full All Out with potentially Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa, which should be great again. And then going back to the Cody thing, I'm going to take the stance I haven't heard anybody else take on this whole Cody thing, is that he's, you know, people saying, like, this was kind of heelish. I thought it was the opposite. I almost thought this sounded like a guy who's trying to hold on to, like, a fans by, like, going out there and saying, we are the competition, you know, doing this rah-rah speech about leaving the competition. We are the competition. I thought that was, personally, in my personal opinion, I thought that was rather unnecessary to, like, air that stuff out on television. But the segment effectively put Black over, I thought, but then I thought that was pointless. And, I mean, if it just simply leads to Cody beating Black, then, like, I don't know how much this was for. But, I mean, a solid use of Black, very good use of him, and then I thought that segment kind of offset it.
Yeah, right. That's where I'm at in terms of the kind of the effectiveness of it. I think it had, like the kind of the behind-the-scenes competitive stuff, like very much – you know, babyface in nature, but just a little forced, a little unnecessary. And like I said, I do want to go watch it back to make sure I didn't miss anything. But I think, look, the end game of it, though, when you just kind of wrap it all up, you know, Malakai Black was certainly a focus here. And I think the positive of this is he had a really, really strong night. I mean, he had a great crowd reaction. He had a really cool entrance. He looked good in the match. He got the big win. And so that's all very positive. I think AEW has something clearly that they can build off of. And at this point in time, as we sit here today, can drive down a lot of different roads with him as a heel, as a babyface, potentially. He's kind of in this tweener spot right now. Not in terms of how he's been booked, but in terms of how the crowd is reacting to him, Joel. And so that's a good thing, even if kind of they muddied it a little bit, in my opinion, with the retirement stuff. But the bottom line is, this night was, yes, about Cody, but it also was about Black, and on the Black side of the house, success.
Yeah, and I agree with all of that. And what I think is that, you know, part of that promo that he did afterwards was really just trying to reestablish him, you know, back as the baby face. Because Malakai Black's reaction over the past couple of weeks, and especially tonight, has been, you know, people who are fully supporting him. And I think that, you know, the reactions that we're hearing from, you know, the callers and from people inside the arena too, is that they are going to have a lot of different ways that they can have this play out. You know, if they do want to eventually turn Cody heel, because I could see a situation where Cody is away for a little bit, and then they do another match again, and then I would really like to see Black beat him. You know, not having, not just like another caller had mentioned before is with Brody Lee, is that Cody came back and then beat him. But I would like to see, you know, because in this story, Black was really focused on Cody. He was hyper-focused and wanting to beat him, and Cody, you know, didn't take it as seriously. You know, he was kind of having fun in the match a little bit, and Black caught him quite a few times. And so it was fine with me that this was such a short match. And then you could have in their follow-up be a little bit more competitive, but Black still beats him in the end. And then that really leaves Cody, you know, questioning a lot of things. You know, like a caller had mentioned too, is that maybe that's the catalyst for him going heel as well.
Yep. Well said. Real quick, I want to take, Greg, your point on Britt Baker in terms of, like, her position as a babyface, or excuse me, I think you took the side of things that she's a heel. Joel, I think it's working for Britt to kind of play this middle ground right now in both directions, because she just, that's kind of her character and the crowd's reacting for her. You know, is that going to catch up to her at some point, or can she just ride this wave of just being that kind of undefined act because it works for her into, you know, perpetuity here?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely an interesting thing how they've tried to pivot away from her being, you know, more of the heel person with, you know, antagonizing the crowd, antagonizing Tony Schiavone and some of the other people, where she's trying to be, you know, the same personality, you know, of like the Mean Girl, but with different content, I guess. And I could see her, you know, kind of directing more of that towards heel opponents. I mean, I would like to see that. I mean, right now she's facing, you know, Red Velvet, who is a for sure babyface. So, you know, Britt Baker is still kind of in this almost tweener type role right now. But I think that you definitely could get away with her still being the same, but still, you know, making those antagonistic attacks more towards her heel opponents.
9 times out of 10, I'm very much in favor of you have to define your characters in a lane. You know, keep them in a lane. It's just, to me, it makes it easier to tell, you know, clear stories that way and to get investment from your audience in that way. And there's time for Shades of Grey for sure. And I think they made a good call on this one for right now, because when you go back and look at the Britt Baker babyface character that they tried to run with early on in the company's history, I mean, it was as flat as flat can be. I mean, there was nothing there. There was no depth. There was no, you know, crowd reaction. She just kind of fell on deaf ears in a lot of ways. And it was the heel persona that kind of brought her back to the table, where she found that voice, where she found that outlet for her charisma to kind of shine through. And so my worry with the positive crowd reactions to her as a heel character was, okay, they're going to just flip her baby face and then she's going to lose that edge. And by walking this line the way that she's doing right now, she's not defined in a clear lane, but she's able to still accentuate those points and that those parts of her personality and her character that made her into this main event act. And so I'm cautiously optimistic that she can continue to pull this off. And it's not happening up and down the show. I think that benefits her in this case too. So I'm tentatively on board with this, Joel.
Yeah, I very much think that this is working, you know, right now, because crowds do want to cheer her. And so the last thing you want is for her, you know, to call them Whataburger faces and go back to that kind of type of stuff. So, I mean, I want to see what the reaction is. I think she's going to have a very positive reaction, but I want to see, you know, what's the content from her like, you know, towards the crowd in Pittsburgh, you know, and then where do we go from there? You know, is it still her continuing to be the same type of tweener role where she has that girl with edge, you know, but I really do think that this is working for her right now.
Yeah. Yep. Greg, thanks. Anything else to wrap up with tonight?
Yeah. One more quick thing was the, what's up with that Dark Order? They're basically getting rewarded. They couldn't challenge the Young Bucks. They get to challenge Gallows and Anderson for another company's titles. I don't know what's up with that. My last point was going to be that maybe we'll talk more about this next week, but it's going to be very interesting how all this talent in this roster is balanced with the coming of Rampage, combined with the appears the new talent coming in. And so that's going to be very interesting to see, because one thing, you know, people are saying more and more, the, you know, serious possibility of roster saturation, all this. And so far it's been balanced out pretty well, and we'll see if that seems to be the case with this new hour of television and the new talent coming in. So
yeah, absolutely, Greg. Thanks very much. Yep, appreciate the call, man. Thank you. Yeah, Joel, I thought the same thing as watching the show. Like, okay, they got two shows now. It's another hour. Because Rampage is 1 hour, correct?
Yes. I want to say yes, but I'm not totally sure. But I thought it was just an hour, yeah.
I think it is. And, I mean, something to think about for sure. But when you look at kind of how Tony Khan has booked these shows, I mean, there's a lot of talent that can be plugged in a lot of different spots. I mean, just tonight alone, Adam Page didn't wrestle, Kenny Omega didn't wrestle, the Young Bucks didn't wrestle, Britt Baker didn't wrestle, Orange Cassidy didn't. I mean, there's a lot of talent that were not on, you know, the show in a wrestling capacity. And so they've got a pretty deep roster. And then if the, you know, rumors are true and you get Danielson and you get Punk, like, that's another, you know, a couple top tier guys. So I don't think they're going to have a ton of trouble, you know, filling this 3 hours with fresh stuff. It's not like they're adding a 3 hour show to Friday nights, you know.
Yeah.
Like, 1 hour to me is doable, and, you know, and I still don't think it spreads your roster all that thin at this point, because, like I said, and just without even thinking, rattled off, you know, 5-6 people that weren't on the show in a wrestling capacity. So, you know, I think they'll be fine as long as they kind of stick to the formula of putting out that fresh stuff. As long as they can do that, I think people will tune into both. It's not a hugely heavy ask.
Yeah, I think that you can still put some important content on that Rampage show, because, you know, that's one thing I haven't been hearing is it's being able to spread the stuff thin. I mean, sure, you know, there's a chance of it watering down some of the booking, you know, but there's so many, you know, wrestlers who could be elevated to, you know, higher level just by having some more exposure on a different show, you know, because as you mentioned, Zach, that there are so many other wrestlers, and really Tony Khan focuses on, like, his top core wrestlers, you know, Chris Jericho, MJF, The Elite, John Moxley, Darby Allin, you know, those are kind of really the big focus who have been on Dynamite. But I think that there's some other wrestlers, you know, you think of somebody like Andrade, you know, where they're really trying to build them up, and same thing with the Death Triangle, you know, that those guys have been, you know, alluded to, they've been in backstage segments on Dynamite, where the Dynamite audience is very familiar with them. But I think you could give those guys, like, such a bigger platform on a place like Rampage.
And the other thing is, too, it's like, they're on Rampage, those other talents that you mentioned, even the Andrades of the world, and even others, like, you know, as I said, Orange Cassidy, and even somebody like Best Friends or Lance Archer, you know, that weren't on tonight's show, all of that whole crop of talent, so many of them have played, like, in the main event space on Dynamite here or there, mm-hmm. even if it was just one match. Like, they're not going to look out of place carrying, you know, Rampage in the main event slot. So it's not like you're going to have people that are at the middle of the card now on Dynamite trying to reach to a higher level on Rampage, because all of them have been there before in some capacity. And I think that's a real strength to how Tony Khan has booked these shows, because you can, you know, plug and play in a multitude of ways. And that's going to help keep Rampage feeling like not a B show.
Yeah, and there's a lot of questions, you know, surrounding Rampage. I mean, is there going to be a definitive roster split? You know, are they just going to keep storylines consistent to those different shows, or are they going to be interchangeable? Because I think that there's pros and cons to both those things, that there can be a lot of things that are lost, you know, if it 1 week it's on Dynamite, another week that's on Rampage. But also you want all that stuff on Rampage to feel as important. You know, because Dynamite is, of course, going to be the A show. I mean, they want both of them to be important, but, you know, are you then going to have, you know, your world title picture stuff on Rampage and Dynamite? You know, is that too much exposure of the Elite to be on both of them? You know, or is that a good balance? I mean, there's a lot of things that are, you know, pretty unknown at this point.
Yeah, yep, absolutely. All right, we go to 305 and Javier to take us home. Javier, great to talk to you, my friend. Hopefully we left a little on the bone for you here.
Hey, Joel. Hey, Darn, where's my music, man?
You know what? All right. I was scrolling through the soundboard.
I knew you were going to forget, so I had one ready and prepared. Give me one sec.
Oh, my.
Oh, wow.
So,
wow.
So don't worry. Everything's okay. We're good.
I'm pretty spooked. I'm spooked, Tommy.
Totally scared. I got to drop the call now. Show over.
Well, I mean, and we're going to have words over you stepping out on our feud with Nick Barbati, apparently. I just listened to Nick and Tom, so, yeah.
Stepping out? Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Zach does not step out.
All in. You know, I'm not falling into Barbati's trap of trying to, you know, name drop me and you know, get baiting me. I'm not falling for it. Sorry.
I always figured that Wade was going to have to book a match between the two of us, but I think Nick is trying to get in our triple threat. But you know, we'll see where that goes.
Well, Wade hates triple threat, so it's not going to be that. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll see. Maybe mini tournament. On the plus side, though, I did agree with you on my feelings towards the show, that it was a middle of the road, just, you know, get us past the week. And I agree with the weirdness of the Cody thing. Now, Joel, you were mentioning Cody, like something about him not having a heel bone in his body. Was that something he said, or was that something that you think, or something that people have been saying?
No, he said that in an interview recently.
Yeah.
That people want him to turn heel, and he's just kind of like, I'm not going to do that. I don't have a heel bone in my body.
I mean, if you need any more proof that he's turning heel, other than him wearing cosplaying as Homelander. Yeah, because I mean, I've been vocal since like the inception of AEW. That Cody prefers heel. He's like a natural heel with, you know, the smirk that he gives and his whole thing. And, you know, and that's, when he had his match with MJF where it was MJF where he did the stipulation where he's not going to challenge for the title. Or no.
Yes.
What about it?
Jericho. Yeah. With Jericho.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, ever
yes.
since then,
yeah.
It's like, well, That stipulation makes sense because, you know, he's going to turn heel and then go back on his promise. And then when I think it was around the time that they were kind of teasing the reformation of the Four Horsemen for a while, and we were having the questions on whether he's turning heel or not, but the audience had not, you know, turned him heel yet. So, and then he had that one promo where he pretty much, like, in his meta speak, said that, oh, some people have been asking me if I'm going to go heel or if I'm going to go white hat or black hat, I think was the reference that he made. And, you know, I'm just going to go just, you know, essentially ride a face until you guys get tired of me, essentially. And I think ever since then, people started getting tired of him, and I'm pretty sure he'll end when he comes back, because I'm sure he's going to probably take some time off for, you know, whatever he has to do. He's going to probably end up coming back as a heel. Or do something in his first appearance that's going to turn him heel. So, and then it's going to be fun because he could be a detestable heel. I really enjoyed his heel run when he was in the Independence.
Yeah, that was really good.
I think they need a big time heel. You know, on the show, it's like we said that so many guys, you know, so many times like the babyface is going over, and you know, the Elite, they're doing their heel role right now, and they're not that serious, you know, heel. And I think that Cody could definitely play that role as that big-time serious heel that the show does need, where baby, because they have so many baby faces and so many people that people like on this show. And so I definitely would like to see Cody in kind of the elevated role that people are going after.
Let me read an email here because it fits into this conversation. It's from Henderson in Charlotte, North Carolina. And he first talks about the Jericho-Hoovy match. He says, that Jericho-Hoovy match was rough, except for the top rope finish. I guess Jericho trying to rip the mask off was paying homage to their old rivalry, but it didn't really make sense in the context of the story they were trying to tell. Super heel move, so who am I rooting for? On a brighter note, I can't begin to tell you how much I enjoyed the visual at the end of the match. MJF standing in front of a crowd that looked like they actually hated him. A sea of thumbs pointing down, middle fingers, and galled faces brought a smile to my face. A true heel in 2021 is something to be applauded, and then immediately booed out of respect. Thanks for all the great content. Yeah, thanks, Henderson. This fits into that conversation. I mean, I think MJF is becoming that, Joel. Like, mm-hmm. He's firmly in that lane. But like you said, I mean, or like Javier said, the Cody playing that heel role, I think, can get this type of heat that Henderson's talking about if he's in the heel space that he was on the independent scene. Like, that was hot for a long time, Joel.
Yeah, I mean, he was great in that role. And so, like I said, you know, Cody is definitely trying to build up credibility, you know, in his interviews. But I agree with Javier that I think that this is probably, you know, him moving more towards that direction of becoming a heel. I mean, tonight, I mean, I thought that this was, like I said, kind of filling more time and trying to bring it back more towards Malakai Black. But that's what I would like to see out of Cody is, you know, that I think that fans are, you know, they're kind of done a little bit with the rah-rah rally speeches, especially like he gave again tonight. And I think that him turning heel would definitely freshen things up for his character.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, too, Javier, you brought up a great point about the title thing. Like, for – I think a lot of Cody's stuff, it does live in its own little world because it almost has to, because he can't revolve around the thing that everything else is really revolving around, which is that AEW World Championship. And as a heel, he can pivot back and get back, you know, on that path, which I think just puts him back into like the main just AEW Dynamite ecosystem. So that's it's a great point, Javier. And back to you.
Yeah. And I mean, since you brought up Jericho, yeah, that match started rough.
Yeah,
to say the least.
I mean, once the two, yeah, particularly like on the first couple of Hurricanranas, after they got warmed up, it you know, and they stopped just, you know, and then slowed down a bit. I got into it because it did feel like an old, like a, you know, I've watched very little Lucha, but when you have like two older luchadors going up against it, it kind of felt that way. So I dug it, and I mean, yeah, it's most likely due to, you know, Jericho's condition and his age and stuff. But I mean, let's not forget that they're telling the story that he's going through a gauntlet and, you know, he's going to be slower and more exhausted and more tired with every match that goes by. I mean, it's just good happenstance that fits maybe his actual condition. But for the most part, I've been soaking in the storyline because I just have a strong impression that this is kind of his, you know, like his, you know, retirement tour essentially. Cause when he came out and he was soaking in the Jericho, you know, Fozzy music, and the crowd singing, that the look on his face was different than he normally has, which is like, oh, I'm just going to soak it in because, you know, people love me. This was almost like, I'm going to soak it in because time is running out. It's just the impression I got from his look.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I kind of noticed that too. You know, that was kind of something that, you know, I noticed it. I didn't think too much about it. But you know, we'll see. I mean, they announced him that he's going to be one of the full-time commentators for Rampage. So maybe he's going to do a scaled back schedule. You know, I mean, we'll see.
Well, he's at that age where it's any day it could be his last one. And so, yeah, I mean, it's kind of cool to see him on this week-to-week basis. And the matches aren't great, of course. But, you know, with him, sometimes it just doesn't matter. He's just got that connection. And so he doesn't have to have a 4-star classic every night out. Javier, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and I'm not saying he's going to be gone forever, but pretty much like the regular schedule that, you know, particularly the schedule he's had recently. But definitely, you know, so, you know, cause I mean, even Mark Henry and Big Show still want to wrestle. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, we'll get one-offs with each of those guys at some point for like a, you know, for a pay-per-view, maybe each of them take a pay-per-view for themselves, or they'll perform one pay-per-view each. So I'm just soaking it in for now. You know, with the warts and everything.
on Adam Page, yeah, I think they're going to pivot to the Young Bucks with the Young Bucks. I had the same thought, but the Young Bucks saying there's nobody for us, that it's going to be Page, and likely at first it's going to be Frankie Kazarian. But I think that for the pay-per-view, one name that wasn't mentioned, Adam Cole.
Baby.
That would be something. Yep.
Reunion.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, didn't he say that he was going to be with the company, or they said that he was going to be with the company, you know, through SummerSlam? So what is that? That's August 21st? Yeah, that would be.
Yeah,
that would be something.
A couple. And my understanding is that he basically is doing that as long as he doesn't get the no compete, and that's 2 weeks later. So you can essentially have one of those I forgot what they call it where you challenge, and if you win you get a title shot, if you lose you can't, the eliminator contender. Yeah. I forgot what they call it, but
championship contender match, Javier. That's what you're looking for, championship contender match.
That's nonsense.
Well, yeah, sort of, but there's a specific. It's I think elimination championship contender match, something like that.
Yeah.
Because if you lose, you cannot challenge that team ever again. So they could do one of those. He can win it, and then just say, "Oh, but you never said who my tag team partner is going to be." And then you know you have 2 weeks build with Adam Cole if that weekend is Adam Cole's last weekend, in WWE. If he jumps ship, you know, that's assuming. I don't think it's gonna be Punk, because I think Punk is gonna be the whole reason to get Paige out of the main event is because I think Punk is gonna end up, either Punk or Daniel Bryan is gonna end up being headlining with Omega at the pay per view, because at First Dance, two things I can see happening in First Dance, because Darby Allin's obviously gonna be Punk's first opponent at First Dance likely. And then Christian Cage and Omega would be the main event. And then after Omega wins, his actual challenger for the pay-per-view is going to show up, which would probably be either, you know, my guess would be either most likely Punk. The only reason I don't think it might be Daniel Bryan, because we've got G1 right around the corner, and I don't know if you might want to get involved in that. So, because G1 starts like 2 weeks after that. So, you know, bringing in both, I mean, what are you really doing if you bring in both, like, at the same exact time? I think it better, you know, if Brian wants to get his New Japan legs under him, and he wants to do, you know, go and do G1 if he wants to, and then after G1 then show up at AEW.
Yeah, I definitely think you want to stagger. I think that's the right strategy. Mm-hmm. I agree, for sure. You know, as shocking as it would be to see them like close together, just from a business perspective, it's you know, separate that out, you know, both those guys will draw good numbers and
yeah,
dollars. So, you know, you got to absolutely, I agree, Javier, 100%. Anything else, man?
Well, and speaking of pivoting, I liked how they worked, Dash's injury into with Dash, right? I get him confused, or is it Dax? Yeah, Dash.
Cash.
His injury.
Cash.
Yeah. Cash.
Yes.
Cash
straight
Wheeler,
cash.
Yeah.
Only.
Okay. Yeah, that guy. I like how they worked his injury into the storyline that we're telling. Like, oh, they did it on purpose, and it was a nice pivot for that to, you know, work was an unfortunate situation into the story's benefit.
Yeah, I thought it was really well done. That was one of my notes here. I think one of the highlights of the show, to be honest. Like, I just thought the intensity of the promo was good, and both teams were like made sense with kind of the angles that they took, everything that happened last week. And even Santana and Ortiz, like, were able to kind of still own what happened in a way that kept the feud hot, you know? And so I thought it was a really good piece of work, top to bottom, Joel.
Yeah, I like the way that they pulled it off, because, you know, I mean, definitely we want to see this match in its full incarnation.
Right.
I mean, because we definitely feel like – we got cheated out of, you know, not seeing everything that was supposed to happen here. And so I think it works, you know, letting people know, like, all right, in a week or a couple weeks from now, you're going to be able to see the full thing as it was intended.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yep, I agree. Javier, what else?
A quick note, was there anyone in the arena as happy as Eddie Kingston sharing the ring with Sting? Because, I mean, that dude was marking out.
I noticed that, too. He made him do the yell thing at the end.
I thought that was a cool moment. That's the thing I like about AEW is you get moments like that of people being honest and being true to themselves. That was just so cool.
That was really cool. I'm glad you pointed that out because I noticed it too. And if you have, if anybody out there listening missed it, go back and watch the just as the match finished, just all the happenings in the ring. And Eddie Kingston, he looks like just a kid seeing his hero for the first time and making him do the, you know, the patented Sting yell. It is great. He's got just the best look on his face. You're so right about that, Javier.
And also in that segment, I also got a kick out of the referee raising Sting's hand in victory.
Yeah.
And Sting's like, what are you doing?
Yeah, totally self-aware. Like, nah, man, like, raise these guys' hands. I did nothing.
Yeah, so I got a kick out of that. And then for the someone brought up Ruby Soho. She I think she's another top-tier contender for Britt Baker. I had been thinking who on Impact would also be good. I don't think I like the idea of Deonna Purrazzo versus her, but Jordynne Grace would be another good opponent for her if they want to, you know, open the forbidden door in that direction. So that's the one thing I've kind of like lamented is not seeing more, because, you know, they have a lot of women like on Dark. Why not send some of them over to Impact to help them build their characters and stuff? So that's the one thing that, you know, it's like, you know, you are occasionally sending people over. Why not send, you know, some women too?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have to think that's probably coming. I mean, I don't have anything to base that off of, but they've been trading talent, you know, back and forth, left to right. I got to think at some point that'll happen. And it might be like, you know, somebody like Purrazzo just to make it fully impactful. But I think you're right. I mean, there's talent on the AEW roster that could use extra work in front of different audiences. So I think I don't know. I think it's a matter of time.
Yeah, and it blew my mind now that we're actually having the Impact titles, tag titles, being defended on AEW. That's just, I don't know. For some reason, I mentioned this, I took to an email I sent to Wade, but for some reason, when I see somebody else's title being defended on a different program, I don't know, it's so much cooler than if it happened, you know, because with the Tanahashi thing, I thought the Tanahashi was going to be challenging Archer on AEW, and I'm like, that's going to be awesome. And I'm like, oh, it's Resurgence. I'm like, well, that's a new Japan show. That's kind of cool, I guess. Yeah, I don't know.
No, there is a novelty there. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's weird because, like, I think if they just changed all the titles and just traded titles, just used the company's titles, I think I'd love the company for just some unfathomable reason. Yeah, but I think that pretty much covers everything.
Yeah, no, we did a good job. Thank you very much, and you're about to be a busy guy with the G1 coming up for sure.
Oh yeah, I probably won't be calling these things as often because I want to keep up with them, and you know I've been a little bit the New Japan Pride podcast has gone kind of biweekly just because of work issues,
yeah.
But. But yeah, I'm hoping they get cleared for time for the G1. I mean, I'm taking that first week of vacation, of the G1, as vacation. So I could get used to the grind because I hate getting it spoiled. One note I forgot, which was actually on the show, but did you guys catch the major, PBR commercial?
Oh, I did not, but I heard all about it on Twitter. I missed that because I was a little bit behind and fast forwarding through commercials. It was Gage and Cardona, right?
It was Cardona, Brian Myers, Chelsea Green, Hornswoggle, and there was another person. I don't think it was Gage. It was somebody else. I just really couldn't get a good look at him. So, but yeah, so that was just kind of, I'm like, well, okay, they lost Domino's, but they got something else. And just, I mean, you wouldn't see this in the WWE, wrestlers, you know, doing these commercials without it being like, you know, super signed and delivered, and rubber stamp of the WWE, which I thought was cool.
Oh yeah, no, for sure not. And yeah, no, this was cool. I got to go check it out at some point because I did miss it. But yeah, I mean, it was a hot match for that weekend. I don't know, like, the staying power that it has, you know, or how much of a broader audience it's going to bring in. But you know, for that crowd at that moment, I mean, it worked, and they're certainly milking every cent out of it that they can get.
Yeah.
All right, guys. So that's pretty much all I had. So I wish you both a good night. Stay frenemies, Hadorn. So
100% frenemies. Now get off the show.
All right, have a good night.
Get Adel happier. Thanks, man.
Thanks, man. Great to talk to you as always. All right, Joel, we'll wrap up the caller portion there. I want to get to one email that we haven't been able to kind of squeeze into the our conversation. It's from JB from Detroit, so we'll finish with this. And he goes, hi, Wade, or Zach, it's JB from Detroit. Who do you think will be the fifth and final surprise Labor of Jericho? Could it be Punk or Brian? So we debated the first part of that question in terms of we're not sure if the fifth is MJF or the fourth is the end. But assuming that MJF had it wrong and there's going to be one more before All Out, I mean, to you, reading the tea leaves of the rumors of Punk and Brian coming in, is that in the cards in your eyes as far as who it could be? I'm not sure it makes sense, but it would be a surprise. Yeah.
It would definitely be a surprise, but I don't think that's the way that you debut either of those guys. You know, I mean, sure, it'd be cool because Punk had a lot of matches with Chris Jericho, but, you know, that's not really the place I would go with that. I mean, gosh, yeah, it's hard to think. I mean, you'd probably be looking, you know, somewhere outside the company. You know, maybe do you think it could be someone from New Japan, you know, that they could try and bring somebody in from there to be that last labor? I mean, I'm not sure, really. I'd have to look at their roster to see who would make sense, if there is anybody, you know, who's going to be in the United States. I know that they're having that resurgence show that's coming up pretty shortly. So, I mean, I would think that if it's not MJF, it's probably going to be someone, again, who's outside the company, because Wardlow is kind of the big monster. And so there's not really someone else in the pinnacle that would make a whole lot of sense. I don't know. What do you think, Zach? I think probably someone from New Japan or Impact to come in for that.
Yeah. I mean, Punk and Brian would be a surprise, but it just does not fit with just everything going on and those guys tying themselves to MJF. Just as cool of a surprise as it would be, I just don't think that's a direction you want to go at this point. I mean, those are guys, both of them, that have to cross paths with MJF down the road, you know, like as opponents. Like those are both money matches, Punk versus MJF and Brian versus MJF, I think are, you know, our top matches that the company can have. So, yeah, I keep them far apart. I think somebody from New Japan would be kind of, if I had to pick, that'd be the direction that I would go. I just don't know who it would be. I mean, obviously, if you could get anybody, like somebody like, you know, that has a connection to Jericho's past with that company, like a Naito or something like that, would be obviously tremendous. But, I mean, that's probably out of the realm of possibility at this point. But yeah, I think Impact makes sense, too. I mean, maybe somebody like, you know, a Sami Callihan or something like that. I don't know. Or a W. Morrissey even could potentially work. He's a big guy, heel. So, yeah, a lot of options. But I think there's almost 100% chance that it's that direction and not Punk and Brian.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just really thinking about if it is somebody from New Japan, it could be somebody who's on that resurgence show. I mean, they haven't announced Suzuki. I mean, that's a name that a lot of people have brought up before. I'd like to see him and more involved, you know, bringing him at some point into AEW. I mean, gosh, they just announced Ishii, you know, to be on that show.
I just was going to say, yep.
And I'm like, man, if you're talking about one, have Chris Jericho have one just one awesome, awesome, awesome match with somebody who can just have just a hard-hitting, grueling match before he gets to MJF. I mean, like, Ishii would be the big name for the people who have been following wrestling, who are watching all the different brands. Again, you know, he's not the big mainstream name for people who are just watching AEW or coming into it new. But, I mean, that is probably the guy, if I'm looking at Resurgence, who I would want to bring in for this.
Yeah, no, that's a great call. Yep, great call. And, yeah, they did just announce that today. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see. But I guess, to answer, JB, your question, I just don't think it could be. I mean, could it be? Obviously, yes. But I would bet that it's not. He asked one more question. Who will Lambert's backup be next week, and what will his role in the company be moving forward? Interesting. Yeah, this segment kind of felt kind of out of the blue because we haven't heard from him since the last time he was on the show, which was, gosh, over a month ago maybe. Yeah, Joel, your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that they are bringing back Dan Lambert. I mean, I'm glad that it wasn't just like this one-off kind of weird thing that they are doing some follow-up with this. But, I mean, just you'd have to look at and see who's a part of American Top Team. I mean, when he was there, you know, his first appearance, I mean, he was with Amanda Nunes and Jorge Masvidal. So, I mean, those would probably be the first people that would come to mind. But otherwise, you would really have to look at, you know, who is also a part of American Top Team. And, I mean, they have some other, you know, big names. I mean, like, Rozenstruik is part of it. Dustin Poirier just had his big fight against Conor McGregor. It would just be kind of looking at whoever is with them. And, I mean, that's a whole huge list of fighters, you know, that would be on American Top Team.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where this goes. I don't know that I have a definitive idea of what his role is moving forward. I think it may just be, you know, to provide, like you said, that connectivity to that scene, you know, to see if, like, you can pull some eyeballs from people that, you know, are watching MMA. Like, I kind of think that's the root of this. And, I mean, my expectations aren't huge on this, Joel.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not expecting it to be like a huge thing, but I'm like, man, if you can still like utilize, you know, like a name like Nunez and Masvidal, like, I don't know how many eyeballs it brings over from people who watch MMA. I don't know how many people kind of cross over. I know that there's a lot of people who watch wrestling and then go into MMA, but I'm not sure how, you know, vice versa, if it works the other way around. But as far as just being a wrestling fan, like I've said before, like, I'm open to seeing more UFC fighters a part of it. Like, I think it brings just another, like, cool factor, because I feel like UFC is, like, really on fire right now. I mean, they've just had kick-ass show after kick-ass show. That I think just, like, bringing more of those guys into the fold, you know, is only a positive.
Yep, I agree. All right, man, let's put a bow on it right there. Thanks to the callers. Thanks to our emailers. Joel, thanks to you. Take a minute here and just talk about all the great work you do for PW Torch and PWTorch.com on a regular basis, including your social media.
Yeah, so you can follow me at my social media. I haven't been keeping up with it as much. Like I mentioned before, I'm kind of in a move, but as things start to settle down a little bit, I'll definitely circle back to social media, more watching more wrestling, getting more involved with the Torch as well. So you can find me on Twitter at Joel Dehnel. That's JoelDehnel. And then you can also find my articles that I post, which are the hits and misses columns, where I go through all the major segments in AEW. So you hear a lot of that content here, but I go a little bit more in depth for my articles, and you can find those a little bit later in the week at pwtorch.com.
Great. Again, guys, Wade will be on the VIP side of things a little bit later, running down the show on the Wade Keller Hotline, pwtorch.com/goVIP, if you want to check out Wade's thoughts on the hotline, as well as a multitude of other different podcasts and audio content all throughout the week, pwtorch.com/goVIP. It's been a blast. I'm PW Torch Assistant Editor Zach Haydork. You can go VIP and check out my weekly audio show on the Canvas. It's a show that just analyzes the art of wrestling, just taking, kind of leaving some of this type of conversation out and just honing in on a current event from an artistic point of view, looking at the performance side of the business. And last week we broke down Nick Gage versus Chris Jericho. So we just did a deep dive into that match, the artistry of it, the story, the psychology, broke it all down top to bottom for almost an hour. So go VIP, pwtorch.com/goVIP, and check out that show. And make sure you're heading to pwtorch.com on a regular basis to check out Joel's stuff. You can check out my receipt columns there, as well as a bunch of news, show reports of all the major wrestling shows throughout the week, Monday through Sunday these days, hard-hitting editorials, additional hits and misses on other shows, and just great content top to bottom from a really talented team of contributors. So use pwtorch.com to get your fix. I think you'll be happy that you did. Joel, one more time with your social media.
Yep, you can follow me at Joel Dehnel. Again, that's JoelDehnel.
Great. You guys can follow me on Twitter at ZHeydornTorch. That's at ZHeydornTorch. Thanks very much for listening. For Joel, I'm Zach, and we'll catch you next time.